Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do it.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon after another weekend of outstanding rugby in the... We had an email that mentioned Avicii Premiership. Do you remember those days? We used to have the music for the Avicii Premiership and everything, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could use Oasis because it's the Gallagher Premiership, couldn't we? But it's just not the same energy.
Yeah, and... a bit of tragedy with Avicii as well. I think we retired that whole thing.
Oh, we did after the sad death of Avicii.
Yes.
If you're not a long time listener and don't know what the hell I'm talking about, it used to be the Aviva Premiership and we called it Avicii.
Because Phil's wife got it wrong.
Basically.
Although, if you were going to have an Oasis tune for the Premiership, which one would it be?
I reckon...
I think I know the one.
Supersonic at the moment.
Yeah, I was going to say Supersonic.
Supersonic?
Yeah.
Well, if it's going to be in the same sort of vibe as Avicii, which I know there's not much crossover, it'd have to be Effing in the Bushes.
Okay, yeah.
It's a good song.
That is a cracking song. Yeah. That would be my walkout song, should I do UFC, which I probably will do in the next couple of years. Probably get in the big leagues.
You're just peaking your athletic performances on an upward trend.
You can imagine going, now it's time to talk about the Gallagher Premiership.
It's not.
That works.
That's good
said,
song.
It depends on the visuals, doesn't it? Because do you remember?
Well,
when...
people are just imagining us in parker jackets now, swaggering around. Because kid,
a lot of the Super Bowl walkout music is a little bit esoteric. So they've had like Wolf Mother. They've had all sorts of, and it all depends on the visuals and where the team is from.
Super Bowl walkout music.
Super Bowl.
Do they have different music than the teams normally have then?
Yeah, so they have like a little intro video. So if you look at the Green Bay Wolf Mother...
Is that Thief in the Night?
Or Woman.
Song? Or Woman? I doubt it'd be Woman for that. I bet it's in the Night.
I think it is, yeah. But like, that isn't what you'd necessarily think of for NFL, but it worked.
I'm just trying to find Thief in the Night by Wolf Mother now.
Yeah, it's
just another thing. But they
do one every single year for every team about their journey and how they got there, and then they all run out onto the field.
I think I might have the wrong band because I can't find "Thief in the Night" by Wolf Mother, so I must have the wrong song.
Hmm. Anyway, well, I guess it's your profession, not mine. right. By the way, what another
Joker and the Thief?
There you go.
This one.
That's the one. Very good tune.
That's good. It's got a slight, ever such slight echoes of the song that Chicago Bulls went out to.
Yes, yes. It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that gets me excited. That makes me want to tackle something now. The other thing which always makes me want to tackle something
high with no arms.
Yeah. The other thing that makes me want to tackle things is just the smell of Red Bull. The smell of Red Bull makes me go wild. I don't know.
When I went to watch some rugby down in Devon a few weeks ago, Thomas ran into the changing rooms and I was just hit by this waft of deep heat and Red Bull as I walked through the changing room. I was like, right, I'm ready. Yeah. I can play.
Does the Kill Bill music wash over you?
Yeah.
Exactly the same. I gave Louis, my lad, and three of his mates a lift home after practice on Wednesday night and they all had that wet, damp mud smell, and it is such a beautiful aroma.
Delicious.
There is something about that.
BO and damp, damp mud.
Teenage boys.
Yeah. I haven't even said hello. I'm Tim, that's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
That's JB.
Hello, Tim.
And we're here, we've got a lot to get through tonight. We've had some brilliant correspondence as well. A bunch on email, which we'll get through.
God, the emails have been busy after this week's results. It's really fired people up.
They've been great.
And do you know what? It is indicative of how good the Premiership is. People really care. When you get invested in this competition, that's when you realise how good it is.
Yeah. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com is where you can find us there. Patreon.com/eggchasers. Thank you and welcome to our new patrons. And we hope you enjoyed the couple of extra podcasts.
Yeah.
Which we furnished you with.
Seems to be people are really enjoying them.
Yeah. The concept of which is, well, we don't know what we're going to do before we do them.
Yeah. Giving you something extra without taking anything else away from anyone else.
100%. So thank you very much. Just by listening, you're helping make the podcast possible, especially if you hit subscribe, especially if you tell your mates. And let's crack on with it. So we've got some matters on the pitch. We've got some matters off the pitch. The matters on the pitch far outweigh the quality, and we will reflect that in the time we spend on it. And in the passion that we have for it, I hope. But there are some other stuff going on. Any news that we need to sort of talk about? Mm. I thought Eddie Jones was going to announce his England squad last week, but it turns out it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow,
is it tomorrow?
Yeah.
Well, that'd be interesting. Do you know, see, this is my first whinge of the afternoon, evening, weekend. England. Everything about rugby, and I do get it. It's not I'm not blaming anyone per se. Obviously, the comms team's giving the fans, the viewing public, what they want, because still the English, you know, England as a team are far bigger than the Premiership. But you're watching this phenomenal game unfold in front of you, and everyone's like, "Oh, you know, that's good enough for England." Or Eddie Jones will be watching that. Or it's so England centric, and it should be Bath centric, and Sale centric, and Saracen centric. But it seems to be all about England, even though you're watching the club game unfold in front of you.
I know what you mean, but it's almost like the obvious leap, isn't it? Because you play, if you're an England player playing in England or EQP playing in England, the next obvious step is international. And it's just like, it's a standard that everyone kind of recognises that you can almost measure, not explicitly measure, but you can understand the levels of performance.
And it's the job of broadcasters or print journalists or whatever to, I've said it so many times, it will bore you to tears, but ultimately sport and broadcasting or reporting a sport is storytelling, and that is the story. Is the story.
And you know, I do not enjoy international rugby nearly as much as I enjoy club rugby, but I think the point is, I guess, that is the standard that they all aspire to. Even though the product isn't as good, that's a standard that they aspire to.
The product not being as good is a subjective thing.
Oh, it's not. How can it be?
It's like the Premiership, in terms of that story, is the audition stage of X Factor. Getting through to the England squad is boot camp.
Do you know?
And, and getting into the side for an autumn international game is like getting on the live shows.
And I don't think anyone likes the live shows as much as they like the auditions. Do they?
You make a very good point.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought this weekend's rugby has been absolutely awesome.
Well, if you look at the games, there were four very close games that were hard to predict. And that is reflected in the predictions. There were two games in particular that were incredibly easy to predict, and the scorelines reflected just how easy they were to predict.
Just on predictions, can I say, I think JB and I had exactly the same predictions, I can't remember actually, but I definitely, if it wasn't for London Irish drawing if they had snuck a win, I would have been, if anyone listened to me, it would have been 6-6, so thank God I can't bet and didn't bet, because I'd have been absolutely fuming at Irish.
Irish, again, because they did it the other week.
Two draws.
Yeah.
Two draws. And the draw against Sale was extra bad because they missed the last second kick. So I don't know how this one unfolded, but it wasn't the last second kick.
It was a close to last second kick, wasn't it?
Oh, what? They didn't again, did they?
They missed. Because I've only seen that there was a brief bit of highlights right at the end. So it wasn't last second, but Paddy Jackson missed the conversion from the last.
Oh, yes. It did not. On 71 minutes.
Yeah, the last scoring event was the Matt Rogerson try with about 10 minutes to go, which Paddy Jackson missed the kick from the touchline, and that was it. No more scores.
And they're ahead for the whole game, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, there's another thing about that game which is worth noting. At the start of the season, I was a little bit worried that Gloucester's new fly half, whose name escapes me, Hastings.
Hastings.
Probably wasn't the man. for them. He didn't start, and I thought this.
Well, it's more that you were talking about how small he looked. Looked like he'd been ill.
Yeah. Hastings? Did I say that one?
No, you were talking. I think Phil might mention he's like his arms. The shirt looked really baggy on his arms.
Yeah,
well, actually, fair play to him.
Like Jermaine Jennis in his prime.
He looked great. No, he's looked great.
Yeah, his kicking keeps Gloucester in games just constantly. He's so reliable. I think he's a cracking signing, actually.
I'll
take it all back.
Yeah, and the person who's he's replaced, albeit not quite a direct replacement, Danny Cipriani, not looking like a great signing at the moment.
Yeah, and as we feared, and we will definitely get onto this one, as we feared, it also doesn't look like the sort of signing which is going to bring a squad together at a time when they really need it. Before we get into that, something I forgot last week. The rugby paper last week, the Room 101 was done by Andrew Kitchener, which I thought you'd appreciate.
Oh,
yeah, family.
Very good family.
Great family.
Great family.
Great family.
Was there anything particular you wanted to put in the...
Rugby podcasts.
No. I just thought, because his examples, I just thought, oh, he really is, as Alan Solomon said that time, he really is from a great family. You can just tell. So, Andrew Kitchener.
Did you notice... all three of the Leicester back row simultaneously did not care that he was from a good family. When they all three hit him, when he had a standing start, it's brutal.
His three in Room 101 were reality TV. He says, a bit of a controversial one, as I know these types of shows are popular, but I tend to find them boring and pointless. The people on there are just there to boost their own profile and make a name for themselves without actually doing anything worthwhile. I think these programmes also project a false sense of reality, which is an issue for younger viewers in particular.
He's always thinking about other people, isn't
he? Good family.
Great family. Yeah,
great family.
And then his second one was the inconsistency of fruit.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
He explains, my frustration with most fruits is on their day they can be delicious, but too often fail to meet these high standards. Perhaps with the exception of bananas, which I find to be tend to be a lot more dependable. This puts me, and no doubt others, off eating as much fruit as I could and should.
Well, I mean, again, he's...
Great family.
Primarily thinking about the kids there.
Yeah.
And the five a day. But he's got a point on nectarines. Nectarines are often inconsistent.
Oh, I'd say the most inconsistent fruit, pear.
Oh, yeah.
Pears are... They have this window, this, like, two-hour window.
There should be an app for
them. They're rock hard.
In between rock hard and mush.
And then, then they just fall apart. Pop. If you get them in that window, though, they're incredible.
I can't bear nectarines where... A bit of the fruit sticks to the stone. I can't bear it.
Yeah, you want it just to fall away.
I feel like I've wasted money.
I did like that on the first line then seemed like a pretty good analogy for Worcester on the fruit. Should we read that first line again?
My frustration with Worcester, not most fruits, is that on their day they can be delicious, but too often fail to meet these high standards.
It's
a great point.
Yeah.
It's a great point.
What was the third one?
His third one was height-related conversations with strangers. I'm a tall person, 6'7", and I'm very much aware of this, and therefore don't need to be reminded constantly by strangers. It is especially irritating if someone is trying to get a cheap laugh from their group of mates at your expense.
Uh-oh.
See, again, he's thinking of other people.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't born in a greenhouse. No, I don't play basketball. And no, I didn't have my Weetabix when I was a kid.
And how was the weather?
I tended to go for porridge instead.
There we go. So sensible. So
what a good family.
So they got an absolute hiding. Do you want to quickly go over this?
Yeah,
we don't need
to spend much time on that.
I'll happily talk about a little bit about Worcester and a bit about Leicester, how good they were.
So there's a couple of things, right? The reason the Premiership is so good, because you can look at this in the wider context, what this means for both teams. It's not a one-off test. You know, there is actually some point in it. I found it very interesting that... Jonathan Thomas described what he saw from Leicester as the most complete Premiership performance that he's seen in a long time. Now, maybe that's just him getting an absolute hiding, but I think it also tells you a little bit of the story about Leicester as well.
So, I think it is probably him having hiding. He's always going to deflect and pay compliments to the other team rather than criticise his own team.
Yeah.
Certainly in the media, he is going to.
Yeah. Ndolo is... such a weapon.
But you give him so much time and space down that left wing, and you miss your first tackle, or don't put an effort into first tackle, and then you have to throw three players in there to even come close to stopping him, and he just offloads inside, which he did to Dolly and Wigglesworth for their tries.
But also, was George Ford starting?
Yep. George Ford was
Yeah, because he spotted, because of the 50-20 threat that Ford will bring, they dropped their winger back, Ford spotted it straight away, crossfield kick to Nadolo in space, game over.
Well, yeah. I think this is the magic of him at the moment. He is so dangerous, and you saw it against Gloucester. They were getting him in those wide channels, and he's just, you know, rampaging. When you have to concentrate on the wide man, you have to spread your defence. All of a sudden, it makes your centres more dangerous. It makes your fly half more dangerous. George Ford is dangerous enough on his own, and he's, you know, threading the needle with various passes, and that's when Nadolo gets into space. So they've got this wonderful way of using him and then, you know, getting him into the game, which he hasn't been in the game for that long for Leicester Tigers. In fact, they've been fairly inaccurate with his use.
But there's very few players like George Ford. If that winger had stepped up to try and nullify the threat of Nadolo, he would kick.
The space is in behind.
He would kick behind and game over. George Ford is just seeing things at the minute.
Yeah, I guess it'd just be easy to misuse him. And I think that has happened in the past, particularly when Ford hasn't been around.
Yeah.
But when he's, because it happened at least three times in that game, probably more, when he's on the open side and you identify the space and you find him in space, it's so hard to defend. It's such a nightmare to defend that he just sucks players in, which creates the space for people around him.
Yeah, I mean, I think just looking at the two teams, Leicester came out with their absolute strongest unit. I mean, they looked awesome.
That back row is pretty handy.
And then they lose two of them immediately, pretty much, don't they? Van Staten and Visa have gone again, which is just not on, really. But anyway, it happens. Mm. But then you look at Worcester, yeah, they've lost Ted Hill, they've lost Owen Williams, and they're looking threadbare already. And they're, what, five games in? Four games in, something like that?
What about Nick David?
Well, Nick David's obviously not there, is
he? Yeah, but we've not seen him at Queen's. I mean, what about him? They've lost him last year.
Yeah, I'm assuming he's still injured. He was injured at the end of last season. Is he still
interesting. Not. I was thinking about him on Friday night, thinking, why are we not seeing him? I presume he is injured, but I don't know.
Why do I have a feeling that did I see him on? No, maybe not. Maybe I'm dreaming that I did see him. Mm. It doesn't matter.
Anyway, there's issues there. The other one is what Wales did announce their squad, and Christie. I can't. I don't.
It's not Christy. It's Chris.
Oh, just Chris. Just I know. It's not Christ. And I think when you pronounce his full name, it's. Oh, I think it's Christy.
It's Chris.
Christa.
It's Chris because I phoned my person in Exeter to ask why on earth is this boy in the Wales squad? I saw him the other week at the AJ Bell, and yes, he's tall. He doesn't look like a Premiership player to me, let alone a international player.
He's apparently a phenomenal athlete, like, as in he would run 200 meters, could do high jump, shot put, and so, like, just an all what a basketball player, just an all round incredible athlete. And the really interesting story about him is that when the St. Joseph's School Festival happened, all these Premiership clubs were going, oh my god,
that boy,
look at this kid. And they were going to talk to him. And what did they find out when they went to talk to him?
Sam Baxter.
He's already signed for Exeter. Rob Baxter was so far ahead of any other director of rugby or coach or anything, to the extent. And Rob Baxter sealed it before that tournament, before anyone else had him on their radar. He got up at 4 a.m. in the morning, drove to South Wales to meet him, to get the deal done. Because he had to drive back for a meeting at 11 a.m. at Exeter.
So there's a little bit more to this than meets the eye. He's not the only one who is at Exeter. So there's three Welsh lads who have come down from Wales who couldn't get a gig in one of the Welsh regions, and they've all signed for Exeter. And they all sound like they want to play for Wales. But apparently there's an even bigger second row down there who's just not quite ready. Now, I'm not saying that this kid is not going to be a Welsh international. He's already been picked. I'm not saying that he's not going to be a great player, but he's definitely not ready for international in the same way that George Cruz is.
No, you're absolutely right. He's not.
Yeah, he's got. Just looking at him, I reckon he's got another 10 to 20 kilograms to put on before he's ready.
I would agree with that. He's only 19.
Yeah,
He will fill out. Wales are just capping
him. Wales, I think he's that good that Wales are just capping him.
He's got that much potential, is what I would say.
He's got that much potential.
It's a land grab.
I hate
it.
It's a land grab. I hate it as well.
It's
because
wrong.
Of potential. Because he could be absolutely unbelievable because he's got all of these amazing physical properties.
The only issue is, this is where the Wales saying you can't play outside of Wales unless this certain situations, that you can't have it both ways. You can't go and land grab a player and then say you have to come and play at one of these miserable regions.
Yeah, exactly. So here'd be my argument, right? None of the regions are particularly competitive. They, you know, they cobble together a good 15, but they're not Leinster.
Ospreys are doing all right at the moment.
Yeah, that is
in four games, so 1-3.
So Ospreys is a great example. Instead of Ospreys paying through the nose for Alan Wynn and Adam Beard, why don't one of those boys go to Exeter and win something, and you develop the next generation rather than having the next generation go, because they've got it back to front. You know, those kids that have gone down to Exeter will be on what, 10? 10 grand to 35 grand?
Well, yeah.
40k.
Yeah, maximum.
Is it not 30k academy
contract? I think
it's
like 30 or 40, between 30 and 40k maximum at that academy.
Absolute maximum, right? And they've got three of them there playing. Meanwhile, what do you reckon Alan Wynn's on, or Adam Beard?
250,
300. So why not?
Yeah, Alan Wynn would be 300 probably. It's that kind of money.
It's madness. So why not get the experienced guys to go and play overseas? You know, they've done their bit for Wales, they've done their bit for so on and so forth. You know, go cap the youngsters. That makes so much more sense. But the way that Wales is at the moment, it's bringing back Will Rowlands, it's bringing back George North, it's bringing back all of these lads. Thomas Young is the latest one. Yep. And then they're forming out their kids. They're mad. They're absolutely mad. Well,
unless the coaching is that much better out of Wales that they're actually we're not very good at developing players here.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not just coaching, is it? It's the fact that you have to play for one of the regions. And what are you going to play in the latter stages of the Heineken Cup? No. Are you going to? You're just not going to.
That is one definite possibility. The other side, for someone like Alan Wynne-Jones, who's, what, 36 now, I want to say, 35, 36, if he goes to the Premiership, like Stuart Hogg is finding out, he will be playing.
Yeah.
They'll get their pound of flesh because they will be paying him a market rate, a true market rate, not a WRU perceived market rate.
Yeah.
And they will get their money's worth, which might have meant that had he had gone 5 years ago, he wouldn't still be playing.
Yeah. Just on this, on this lad, hypothetically, say if he is everything that they think he is. Say, you know, he's the next George Cruz or someone, mm-hmm. right? To get him back, you're going to have to offer him a contract which is far in excess of what you'd have to pay him if you just kept him in Wales to start with. You could go from 35k and then up his salary immediately to 100k for 3 years, and you could do it gradually. But if you want to get him back from Exeter when he's in the latter stages of the Heineken Cup, do you think Exeter are just going to say, oh, actually, yeah, we're not going to offer you anything? They're going to offer him a competitive contract. They'll have to pay...
He's on a four-year deal.
Perfect.
So 23, he could be at the peak of his powers. I mean... Mario told you he was going on a Lions tour at 23, wasn't he?
Yeah. So if he's that good,
yeah. Not saying he is that good. If he reaches anywhere close to his potential and what his potential is talked up to be, he will be a very serious baller.
Yeah. You know, potential's one thing for second rows. They've actually got to go. I mean, it's not like the wing. You can't just be good.
Just be fast.
Yeah, you can't just have one thing. You've got to be pretty hard. You've got to know what you're doing. You've got to know all the line-out calls. You've got to execute right all the time. It's a much harder position for a young man to play, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. You need the experience.
Agreed.
And you need the size, which obviously... It takes some time.
Well, let's talk about the game where Mario Itoje did return to the field.
First five minutes.
Under the post. I'm back.
I mean, I don't even know where to start on this game.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's start or pour a little bit of praise on Saracens, who were absolutely outstanding.
They were up for this, weren't they?
They really, really were. And we're not quite at full strength for Saracens. We're not far off it with that side. Pretty much. Elliot Daly and I think one or two others could have slotted in, but it was a really good team, and they were hard.
They are hard, aren't they? I mean, it's just...
nasty.
I do struggle when Bath are so poor to work out. Maybe they were good because they were against Bath. But no, they are just good, aren't they? They are just really good.
They were excellent, and any weakness in that Bath defence, and there were plenty, but any weakness they exploited, and the way that they just... They do it every way. They scored tries with the forwards grinding it out, the offloading game, the rolling maul, spreading it wide, and Maitland and Malins, who looks amazing again.
So does Ben Earl, those two. You talk we think about Bristol. Ben Earl and Malins alone make a huge hole. Ben Earl's so good.
Yeah,
Malins is so good.
Yeah,
Malins got a hat trick.
The two centres. Lazowski and Tompkins looking awesome and like breaking tackles and distributing. And
I mean, Farrell's quite good at rugby.
He is quite good, isn't he?
Yeah. The pass, the little like double loop around for, I think it was the first million, I want to say it was the first millions try, but there's so many tries that it's hard to keep
count. Scored three tries and is responsible for only 30% of the tries that Saracen scored.
Yeah.
He also completely missed the Muir tackle, so for that try. So he's got, you know, he can improve.
Yeah. He's got things to work on.
He was outstanding. He's got something to work on.
Will Muir runs like a horse, though.
Yeah. Will Muir, you know, was one of the few bright sparks from that.
Very few.
It's just,
from that Bath team.
There's not much you can add to things we've said in the past about Saracens, other than the fact that there was a question mark over could they still be as good as they were when they weren't exactly playing by the rules. In some ways they're better. In some ways they look more focused, they look more together than before, because these are the guys that are left. And if you've stuck with Saracens through the Championship days, can you imagine how motivated you are to go and stick it to every single Premiership club who ever doubted you?
Yeah. Totally. And also, you know, I know they are just playing for their club, but Billy Vunipola is looking like a man who is angry that he was left out.
Yeah, that's some motivation, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's probably the overall story about Saracens, and probably will be for the rest of the season. This is a sort of game that I feel they would have saved for a European semi-final.
Or when they'd lost a big game and then they, as it normally happened, they were playing Northampton.
Yeah.
Four times on the bounce.
No.
60 points on Northampton. Yeah. But that first, so was it 47 or 45-0 at half-time? That is, well, it is unprecedented because it's the biggest half-time lead in Premiership history.
So well done, Bath. They only lost the second half like 21-11. Well done.
As Sarah Elgin pointed out to Stuart Hooper, the biggest ever half-time.
What did he say to that, by the way?
He didn't say very much, to be honest.
Poor Hoops.
He said there's no hiding from that.
Yeah, which was... basically, the theme of his interview was every single time he was like, we've got to look ourselves in the eye, there's no hiding, we've got to ask ourselves some tough questions, blah blah blah. Like, it was just a repeat of those,
but he didn't do what Jonathan Thomas did. He could have said that's the most complete performance that we've come up against.
They are much better than we are, but you know, look through their team, they're not that much better, are they? Like, man for man, I mean, I knew it was going to go down this, well, I didn't actually. I thought Bath would be up by 17 points and then they get beat 30-17.
That's where you put money on Saracens.
100% I put money on Saracens.
You just missed that first part.
Now, here is something quite incredible. I think Vincent Cox is a good player. But they've obviously gone out and got this other guy who's even better.
Riccioni, yeah.
Riccioni.
That's a great sign. Great, as we've already... Phil pointed it out a few weeks ago, and his legs are outstanding.
I couldn't miss them the first game he was playing.
Such good
They're
legs.
Incredible. Shapely, tanned, possibly shaven, tattoos in the right places.
Deserves to be a statue outside the cathedral in Florence.
Yes
quite. Just brilliant. Now, Bath.
I love that. Summarise Bath in a noise.
I mean...
where do you start?
Who do you fire first? Who do you fire
first? Okay. So I'm going to jump in and point something out. I've said this for a long time, and in the rugby paper today, on the front page...
I've seen this.
On the front page of the rugby paper, it was like, have you been listening to Old Egg Chasers podcast? But no, I'm glad someone else is finally saying this. What I've said for a while is, it's just too cushy at Bath. Farley House is incredible. It's lovely, and it's just too nice.
But have you seen how cushy Sale is now?
Because they're at Carrington.
Yeah. Have you seen the new Carrington? Carrington is like the final level.
Man City's old ground, isn't it? Old training ground.
It's like the final level of, do you know when you're playing Championship Manager and you build the imaginary complexes? It's that.
I don't know what it is, but since Bath have moved to Farley House, they are just soft. And my brother got into the Bath first team squad when he was coming through the 21s and stuff. And he used to go and train on Lambridge, which was a concrete block that probably had animals in it at some point, and then had the showers, and it would be at Lambridge on a bog with Danny Grucock and Steve Borthwick
ideal,
knocking lumps out of him. And his whole career, all anyone said about Nick was, he's hard. And he says it was because...
Of the pitch? The training?
Because of training with Danny Grucock and Steve Borthwick, knocking lumps out of him on a bog.
But Danny Grucock's still there, though, isn't he?
He's a school teacher, I think. He was involved in the academy, I think. He might be involved in the academy again. Anyway, they're just soft. by their standards. I wouldn't say this, to any of their faces because yeah.
they are soft.
But this was for Premiership standard rugby. This was so soft, and for all of the good things that Saracens did, and they did a lot of good things, there were dozens of things where it was just so easy. And we criticised Bristol the other week after their first 21 points against Harlequins for just. They were just soft. They weren't closing gaps, weren't switching on. And the same could be said of Bath today.
There's just no pride in what they do. That's the only thing I can come... I mean, there is some players. I talk about them every week. I don't think Sam Underhill plays soft. I don't think Josh Bayliss plays soft. I don't think
Josh McNally.
Josh McNally.
Josh McNally and Will Muir are kind of the two that are going...
But that front row... Like
that front row should be absolutely dominating people.
It is an international front row. They are all capped internationals, and they are all good players in their own right.
Tom Dunn's excellent.
They are so much less for Bath than the sum of their parts. Whereas Saracens, and there is an amazing sum of the Saracens' parts, they were so much more than the sum of their parts, and that's the difference. It's the difference from teams like Bath at the moment, Bristol at the moment, to teams like Saracens and Exeter for the last 5 to 10 years.
All right, and I'm starting to come round, and I always think it's too easy to just go, oh, get the coach out, get rid of him, because like a lot of those errors weren't system errors; they were just you just dropped off that tackle.
So,
but I guess you look at Paul Gustard at Quins and the incredible turnaround there with a different character, no one at the helm, but a different
just character. Not him that same, was the important thing
same yeah. players
you look at Leicester and maybe that is the case right. Now I've got a lot of time for Stuart Hooper as a guy. I think he's great, really intelligent bloke, but I think it's if even I am starting to go the spotlight's going to be put on him more and more, then I think
71-17, I mean how does it not there is something to this, right, which is I've got a theory now about Premiership head coaches. I'm going to try and sketch it out because it's a little bit nebulous still, but bear with me. So across the league, you are now seeing these coaches. Stuart Hooper is definitely in this category. Pat Lam is in this category. Sanderson is in this category. We don't really hear enough about what happens at Saracens, but I know stuff goes on there. Borthwick, to a certain degree. And all of them are looking for the extra advantage. Because I think the salary cap now has meant that every team is bloody good. This Bath team is the best worst team I have ever seen. They are outstanding as individuals, and yet where are they? They're winless at the bottom of the Premiership. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we're starting to see all the head coaches basically go slightly insane, whether it be walking up Snowden in the dark, or it's writing love on your changing room wall, or it's reading management manuals. There's only so much rugby you can teach. And actually, maybe that's another thing. There's only so much rugby you can teach because you're limited by the amount of time which you've got. And they all know about rugby. They all know how to play rugby. But there's obviously trade-offs. Like, what do I coach? What do we focus on? Do we focus on breakdowns? Do we focus on... You can't do... Even as a full-time professional, you cannot focus on every aspect of rugby. The game is just too vast for you to do that. So rugby and coaching of rugby is so difficult that they'll do a certain standard of it, but then they get their advantage through... You know, like the whole cultural thing that Sanderson's doing, or you know, all being brothers, as in Bristol, which is now failing. Or in Bath's case, it was systems and processes and management talk. And I think that's
or buying South African farmland.
Exactly. Now that is an unusual way to go about it, but it's very effective.
But that buying South African farmland combined with taking the boys on the piss to Dubai or to Oktoberfest or wherever, that's a great combination.
I mean, you know, even Worcester have got their own thing. I mean, theirs is all about being extra fit and working extra hard.
And super fast Wi-Fi in the academy house.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So I think the Premiership's going to go more and more crazy as the salary cap bites, because you can't buy your way out of this. You're stuck now.
By definition, you have to find the extra percent here and there. And it does become like the British cycling thing? Marginal gains, and it's marginal gains across. Like, you can't improve anything by 10%, so you have to improve 10 things by 1%.
Yes.
The problem with that then is people will look for the silver bullet and buy into the bullshit and go for things. And I'm just going to say a name now that we all might smile, but I don't actually know what this stuff is, so I'm saying it quite flippantly. But people buy into things like Save Your World.
Yes.
Because, and that might be amazing, it might work perfectly, or it might just be a silver, like a...
placebo effect.
Placebo type thing. Or no, it's just kind of nonsense, but if you buy into it, then it will help.
Placebo. Who was I talking to? Someone who played in the programme, I can't remember who it was, but it got on the subject of Harlequins, and I said, oh yeah, or you just, you know, fly a bunch of attack helicopters over. He had no idea what I was talking about. I said, no, look, they actually flew attack helicopters onto the field. And as the Premiership gets more and more competitive, you're going to see more and more crazy stuff. And I think as they're chasing rainbows, they're going to forget actually what it is that they're meant to cook. I think they'll have a massive correction. I think the head of this correction will be Steve Borthwick, because he talks constantly about breakdown defence and set piece.
Yeah,
because he knows what's important. And I think Sanderson knows what's important too, to be fair to him.
Yeah.
He absolutely knows. And then he's got all... But like Borthwick's got like 20 books in his car about learning. So the last book he was reading is all the different ways that people learn. So he is doing that stuff, but fundamentally he's rooted in what his rugby club needs.
Yeah. And it looks like Bath, and in some of the recent games, they've shown the way they're trying to evolve the attack. Obviously Cipriani, they thought was going to be a part of that jigsaw. We predicted the way that that appears like it's turning out.
Yeah, it wasn't unpredictable, was it?
No, it wasn't unpredictable. But you can see some of that attacking shape, but it's that old cliche of you've got to earn the right, and they're not earning the right.
So one of the things which really bugged me today in the Bath game was Maratoji came off because he had a knock. So he limps off. And everyone's like, well, that's his day done, disappointing, save him for the next battle. I don't think he's injured. I hope he's not injured.
Yeah,
but, you know,
it'd be precautionary.
Next thing you know, Watson comes off, and they go, oh, it's precautionary, and you know, he needs to save himself for England. I was like, no, he doesn't. Not when you're 71 points down. You stay out there until you can no longer walk. You don't get out of this. You have not earned the right to come off yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm making him play the whole thing.
And then make him do laps afterwards.
Oh, like it would be the most miserable. They do need someone new at the top. And I think I know the guy.
Michael Checker.
Shall we try? Michael Checker's a great shout.
Michael Checker.
He's not the best.
Let me see if I can guess who JB would say.
ex-hooker. So.
And actually, I'm gonna say before I guess what JB's prediction is that I think I agree with him.
Yeah. I think it would be better than what they've got now.
Steve Diamond, yes, of course it's Steve Diamond. Now, you could even bring Dimes in as a consultant, quite frankly. He's senior enough to do it. He's, you know, he knows everything there is to know about rugby clubs and running rugby clubs. He's, you know, for a long time before the new owners came in, he was basically running the whole thing. He knows his stuff. And he's not going to dress it up in management nonsense. He's going to tell you exactly what you're doing wrong.
He knows how to assemble a squad. Yeah. And he can be ruthless and get rid of players that are not worth the money they're being paid. And he will find players that are value. And in a salary cap world, that's absolutely essential.
And one more thing on him. We all think of him, oh, you know, old-fashioned dinosaur. He is not. He is incredibly bright. And on top of that, when he wants to be, he's incredibly charismatic. He can manage up as well as he can manage down. Now, when he manages down, it can be brutal. But what is this? It's not a preschool. Like, you know, you've got to get men ready to put their body on the line. You need to know who knows what they're doing. And he knows that better than almost anyone.
Also, there's been stories in the past about head coaches who turn up for training and there's a player that they did not sign that Bruce Craig signed for them. And that sort of stuff would not fly
with
Diamond.
Mm. No, it would not.
And I think almost Bruce Craig needs someone like Steve Diamond say, here's the line, you don't cross it.
Yeah, like Sale are doing well now. And that is down to no small part because of the current owners. I mean, you know, they really have taken it to the next level. But they didn't accidentally find Sale. They were coaxed, not coaxed, that isn't the right word. But, you know, they were attracted to the club by what was going on there already. They could see the potential. That all came from Steve Diamond. All of it. Whether you like him or not, and lots of people don't. But back to the thing about all the other...
He's available and he would have a very fast effect.
So. Very fast. And not only that, do you know when I started this thing by saying all the DORs are looking for their point of difference? Well, he has a genuine point of difference. You know, he doesn't need to make it up. It doesn't come from a book. It's a point of difference.
Yeah, he is not looking for the silver bullet, the fake point of difference. He has a real point of difference.
Exactly.
And I quite like the fact that he's, because as you said, he's very smart and astute. He's independently wealthy and doesn't need to take the job. That's almost perfect for Bath.
Yes.
Yeah. Because anyone else will be beholden to whatever Bruce Craig wants to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I would love to see Dimes have a shot of finally making top four.
Yeah, well, yeah. He was one COVID game away from it.
You know, after 10 years. 10 years of...
10 years. 10 years of, you know, managing on half a salary cap, and then he gets the team he needs. Bloody COVID.
Got an email here from Blair, a Bath fan, on email. contact@eggchasers@gmail.com. He said, well, that was embarrassing, but fair play. Saracens were very good. I took your advice from my last email. I think he's had a back and forth with you before, JB, and he had a long chat with his son, who nailed it, who said, Bath might be poor, but it's still a great day out, and I'd rather watch rugby at the Rec than Ashton Gate or anywhere else.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Very good. That is a very
good
point.
The best point, maybe.
Yeah. We'll get to see some great games, so let's just be rugby fans and see if we see out this messy blip. General consensus in the Thatcher's stand was we don't play as a team, but we have some great potential. Needs a bit of a clear out and a new culture. The fans were resigned. I'm about to get the train home and we'll be back in a fortnight for the Wasps game. Thank goodness for Will Muir and Q Buster Cider. Oh, you keeping your glass half full there, Blair. Well played.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be worse, couldn't it? It could be much worse. You could be a London Welsh fan when they were up playing in Oxford. You know, it could be awful. You play in the Rec and you've got an amazing squad and there's no relegation.
Looking today, the sun was shining, blue sky. Mm. There's few better places to be in the world than the Rec on a day like that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when you're a Bath fan in that amazing look, and it is an amazing...
It's a World Heritage Site.
Yeah, it is one of the... It's probably the best place that I've watched any sport in the world.
There are NFL owners out there who spend their billions building stadiums, and they still don't have the Rec.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an amazing location.
And Miles Burley has also emailed and pointed out that the Bath starting pack had 7 full internationals, and in Miles Reid, someone who would have been a full international were it not for an injury in the summer.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in some respects, they have the perfect pack because they are internationals who aren't quite first choice and might not be involved. So they're...
Yeah.
They'll be available all the time.
More consistency. But that it's so frustrating for Bath. Because, and that this is to your point, and I do agree with this, Tim. I think two things can be true at once. I think Hooper needs to go now, because we've seen enough of this. But I also think the players have got a lot to answer for themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do not let them off the hook.
No, not at all. Because this is...
And a lot of senior guys there as well.
Yeah, senior guys, experienced guys, capable guys. We know these guys are capable. We've seen it. We've seen them do it in an England shirt.
So I honestly don't know what the truth is behind, you know, why Gustard left and what the attitude was from the players towards him. I honestly don't know. But I know what the public persona is, which is we felt that we let down Gustard. And because he went first, you know, we felt pretty bad about it. If that's true or not, I don't know. But let's just say it is true. Mm-hmm. You could see something like that in Bath happening, which is, look, you know, we've let a good man fall because we were idiots, because we didn't take...
We were lazy and all the rest of it.
Yeah, because there's no other word for how they played today. It was lazy.
Yeah.
It was lazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe they have that kind of Harlequins effect, and then they win the league.
maybe.
And Hooper goes to coach Zeba.
Maybe.
Perfect.
I've just seen another great email as well from James Mooney, who has said, he just said, please, guys, check out the new beer it's sponsor.
Who is the new beer?
I know who this is.
I've heard of this before. Is it like a gay dating website or something?
It's Grindr, isn't it?
Oh, is it Grindr?
I think.
Beer
It's
Olympic.
It's not Tinder, is it?
Sponsored by Grindr. Yeah. This is sort of the back end of last season, but apparently they've been putting out some great... social media stuff as well, which I will try and find through the podcast. But apparently it's quite a lot of people very much enjoying it.
Good for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
More power to
you. I mean, really, Bristol Bears should be sponsored by Grindr. That would be perfect tie-in.
Yeah, Bristol Bears.
Oh, because... Oh, if I feel like I need to explain that now. That's not any... just because Bristol Bears... there was that period where Bristol Bears didn't have BristolBears.com.
No.
Because BristolBears.com was a gay bar in Bristol.
Was it? Was it not Massachusetts?
No, it was in Bristol.
Yeah. Is that Connecticut? Somewhere? Bristol, Connecticut?
No, it was in Bristol. It was in Bristol, England.
No, it was American.
No, it was in Bristol... England, I'm sure.
No, I think it's American.
Oh, okay.
Don't know.
Bristol Bears gay bar, please. bring it up, Phil.
I've just googled bristolbears.com and it is safe for work. It's just a man in a suit with a finger. Huh? That's it.
So bristolbears.com.
It doesn't matter.
Hold on. How did they get like a 7-year contract for Pat Lamb and they haven't bought the domain for their own?
Maybe
brand.
It's .co.uk.
Yeah. So. BristolBears.com is very similar to when a Premiership Rugby decided to run a competition called #PremPicks. Does anyone remember the PremPicks?
Oh yes, that hashtag was incredible.
Why did you not check?
I'm on BristolBears.co.uk, and it does seem to be a bar of some sorts.
Oh, okay. Do you have to book in advance? How do we?
I'm going to find out. You keep talking.
Yeah. Yeah, Prem Picks. The fact that they didn't check what Prem Picks might be is astounding.
Bristol Bears Fiesta 15
that's awesome.
Impassioned.
Yeah, it's great.
Rugby picture.
But you see, I think it's in Bristol, England.
I think you're right.
Bristol Bear Bar, Old Market, Bristol.
There you go.
Oh,
beautiful.
Lovely
home
stuff.
To Bristol Bear Fiesta.
Can I get a Negroni there?
Southern hibernation. I have no doubt that even if it's not on the menu, the experienced barkeeps of Bristol Bears Bar, BBB, in Bristol will sort you out with a Negroni.
Night out in Bristol, we'll go there for a Negroni.
Perfect.
Lovely.
Love it.
Bristol Bears.
Now,
have we all said enough about Bath? Are we all done with Bath? Finished with Bath?
I'm done with Bath.
Bath?
Yeah, and we've talked about Bristol quite a lot on recent podcasts. Can we talk Exeter and Wasps?
Yeah, you can.
That game. Because that was a really good game.
It was. I really enjoyed that game.
Yeah. And it was surprising as well. So when Exeter score those two tries, the Slade try followed by the Cordero try in the first half, you think, right, they go 15 points to 3 up. Exeter are winning this. They'll win the tight battle. They've clearly got the outside battle, and they're just going to pull away. And they didn't, to Wasps' credit, they didn't. And Wasps scored those two rolling mauls tried, beating Exeter at their own game in that effect.
I thought, yeah.
And Wasps were unlucky not to get more, not to win this game. It was very good all-round Wasp performance.
It was.
And it was only the Exeter fight back and the Exeter heart and the being able to grind it out from situations like this that they've been in many times before that just got them over the line.
I think Wasps are superb. I really do.
At home, it's a good point.
They are the opposite to someone like London Irish. They might be the best coach team in the league, or you know, they're up there with top three. The difference being, I don't think they've got the absolute top end talent to compete. They're bringing in a lot of lads. I mean, they had how many debuts this week? This week alone, I think the scrum half. It was Hugod's first game. It was...
Replacement Hooker.
Yeah, Replacement Hooker's first game.
Harrison.
Was there a centre as well who had his first game?
Simmons.
I'm not sure. But, you know, the point is that they're bringing lads through.
Yeah, Simmons, who came on in the centre, was playing at Nottingham last year.
So, you know, to get these lads...
Who's 21 as well.
Up and running, playing for Wasps, playing well. You know, Dan Frost, did he get another try?
Yeah.
You know, went off injured, replaced by yet another person who had never played for Wasps again. I think what they do is absolutely astounding. But also the way they go about their business, I think that, you know, they play so flat to the line, their ruck speed is so high, so they're getting behind the Exeter lines, and it's not as if Exeter can't defend or don't know what they're doing. Exeter know exactly what they're doing.
And in terms of personnel, I'd say Rob Baxter and Lee Blackett are very similar in that, is they do a lot of due diligence in searching for players, spot the talent and the potential where it exists and bring it in no matter where you've come from.
Yeah.
They're not bothered about a name. They're not bothered about what club you're at. They'll go and find you if you're there.
Yeah, they're not looking through CVs, are they? They're looking through video clips and game tape.
And they're on. Yeah. And in the case of Rob Baxter, what I know, because there was a point where Nick was being thought of. They make Rob Baxter calls and asks, basically gets references from all kinds of people about the kind of bloke these people are. Yeah. And I bet Lee Blackett is the same. Lee Blackett has got the phone number of every championship DOR and talks to them all the time.
Funny you mention that. So I was talking to a friend of mine who I talk to regularly about these things, and he has a theory on Wasps, and this will be music to your ears, which is he is one of the few DORs who takes the championship really, really seriously. And because he does, he gets really good information about who
it's good. Someone does. The RFU don't. So at least Lee Blackett is.
More on them later.
Well, because Lee Blackett and Baxter both played in the championship.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. He actually took his team from the championship.
Yeah,
he's from the championship as a coach.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, they both understand it. They both know it. They know the strengths and the weaknesses, the opportunities there.
Yeah, so you know, I just think what they do is fantastic. Until they spend up to the cap, and I don't believe that they are quite there yet, they turn over a lot of players and also usually quite a lot of high-profile players. Yeah. Until they can spend in the same way that Bath spend, they're always going to be struggling.
Yeah,
but they're a bloody good team.
If they could keep their first 15 fit and out there, they would be a serious weapon, because you add Launchbury and Jack Willis and Fekitoa,
and
a Dogwu. You add those four players and others to that side.
I disagree with you slightly here. And I think if they had their starting 15 available every week, they wouldn't be that successful. And the reason is because I'm going to play the game where I think of everyone having their starting 15, I think they get overpowered. Where I think they have the advantage over everyone else is their coaching of sort of their mid-rank players and the new guys that they bring in. Mm. Because most clubs would absolutely be terrified of having three debutants play. They just couldn't do it. Whereas Wasps can. I think that's their point of difference. So do you remember when they were beating everyone during the COVID games? It's because they could rotate their team much better than everyone else. Yep. And also games fell in their favour.
Alfie Barbary as well, I didn't mention.
Yeah, and there's another one. They just seem to be able to do more things with more players more consistently. I just don't think their top end is that good.
And they're doing some of the non... when people think of Wasps, they think of all the attacking quick play, but actually, as Phil pointed out, they scored some tight tries against
Exeter. Yeah.
Conversely, Exeter, a lot of people say, oh, boring the way they play and stuff. Oh my goodness, they score some great tries. Oh,
those first two tries were amazing. Yeah. The Slade and the Cordero try. The Cordero to back himself on the outside of Marcus Watson. That was class.
Yes.
So good. And it's obviously not just pure pace. It was to create that one-on-one with him at full pelt was brilliant.
I mean, I loved the Sam Simmons number 8 pickup try, just monstering his way over. I love tries like that, but I love a good rolling maul. But anyone that says Exeter are one-dimensional or boring,
They've
heard someone else say it. They don't know what they're looking at.
Yeah.
They play amazing.
And on that, just on the Slade try as well, the initial break and offload was by Dave Ewers, who is as blunt an instrument as Exeter have, but he has that in his locker as well.
Yeah, yeah. Has anyone noticed anything strange about Exeter last few games?
I was going to mention this.
Have you noticed it?
The lack of...
No, gone.
Well,
I was going to say the sponsor. Shirts. Oh, they've got shirt sponsor.
No, that's not it.
Well, the one thing I was going to say was their captain is on the bench.
Yes. He's been fit for four games. He's not started four games.
Joe Simmons, of course. Yeah, that's a great point. So they're picking Harvey Skinner on form. Again, this is Rob Baxter.
Yeah.
You do it in training. You're in on Saturday.
So I think there's two things going on here. And I don't know this for certain, but that's what I think. I think Simmons has played a lot of rugby. Mm-hmm. And I don't like this. I don't like this one bit. It's like many things. I'm just going to make a slight tangential argument here. It's like everybody getting worried that rugby is not safe to play because we keep on talking about rugby not being safe to play. And the more we talk about it, the more people think rugby isn't safe to play.
Catch 22.
Well, it's not safe to play. But that's not the point, right? It's fine.
It's not safe to play, but that's why we love it.
Yes, exactly.
Because it requires courage and bravery and commitment and attitude and you know.
Stop thinking about it. Yeah. Stop thinking about it and go and play, for God's sake.
Go and play.
So yeah, so the same logic I put to player burnout. You know, Joe Simmons is 22 or 24 or something like that.
Yeah, 24. Let's say he's not.
Yeah, so I think they're resting him because he's played a lot of rugby and they're worried about the mental load on him. But that said, I mean, I don't think you get less stressed sitting on the bench. I get the physical load, sure, but he's a 24-year-old professional athlete. You know, go play. It doesn't matter. And he's not even forward. Like, I'd get the 24-year-old prop might be struggling after a full season, but not the fly half. Not having it.
So that's not my read of the situation.
Yes. The second thing I'd say is I think this is Harvey Skinner's chance. I think they've said, right, we're going to see if this guy's got the minerals, and you got four games, prove it.
I think it's not. Well, I'm sorry, I'll very quickly say, because you were going to jump in. My read on it isn't that they're going, oh, well, let's see if you've got it. It's based on what we've seen this week. That's the best player for the 10 shirt.
So my read is slightly different. I think their number one is definitely Joe Simmons, and he's not rested because of fatigue or Man's side or anything like that. However, if you think back 2 years ago now, less than that, when Exeter most recently won the Premiership and did the double, they had Joe Simmons starting, but they had Gareth Steenson on the bench. So they had the drop-off between 1A and 1B. There was a clear 1A and a clear 1B, yeah, but the drop-off was negligible.
I bet you're right.
It was 95 down to 92. Whereas now, because Skinner has played very little rugby at all until very recently, until these last few games, the drop-off is 95 down to 75.
Yeah.
So they are taking this opportunity early in the season where the consequences are lower, but there are still meaningful, important games to raise the level of their number two.
Phil, I love it. I bet you're right.
Do you know who he reminds me of? Henry Slade. He's kind of skinny, wiry. Yeah. I think we'll see him push out to 12 or 13 at some point. Mm. I think we'll see more than just 10 from Harvey Skinner.
And they've been using Slade to do most of the kicking as well when he's been on the pitch, haven't they?
Yeah.
So they're easy, kicking for sticks, that is.
Oh, that would be so Exeter. Thinking about the bigger picture and the long game.
The long game, yeah.
And thinking of a Premiership final when Joe Simmons goes down injured, and thinking about that on week one.
Yeah, and those things will happen. Yeah.
Do you know who I love at Exeter at the moment? The centre, Hendricks. Is it Hendrickson or Hendrickson?
Hendrickson.
Just such a big bloke.
Yeah.
He's just a big man.
Just a big man. Big physical man.
He's like the incarnate of, I can't remember his name, the Northern Irish centre, who's still there.
Big Stew.
No, who's still at Exeter. He's been there for 10 years.
Right. Oh, you mean the most...
Witten.
One of the Witten, two most Ian successful Witten. Ulster players of all time.
Yes.
Ian Witten and Gareth Steenson. Gareth Steenson. Two most successful Ulster players of all time.
Yeah. He's got a lot of similarities in the way that he plays as...
But he's taller and more handsome Witten. With broader shoulders.
I'm not sure he's taller with broader shoulders than Ian Witten.
He's massive, mate.
So is Ian Witten.
Tom Hendrickson is another level of massive.
I'm not even sure. Ian Witten's 6'4". I reckon Tom Hendrickson's like 6'4".
So
just the eyeball test.
If you're out with your girlfriend in Exeter, don't go to the bathroom if Tom Hendrickson's in the bar.
Well, I'm not saying he's not better looking than Witten. Let's have a look.
I'm sure.
His shoulders are massive.
So according to their Wikipedia page, which not entirely sure is accurate, Ian Witten is both taller and heavier.
No! Out of town.
That would be my incorrect. That
not
would be my incorrect. Assessment
Wrong.
As well.
Wrong.
JB, why didn't you lift both Witten and Tom Hendrickson when you were at Exeter?
I'm down there in a few weeks' time. I'll find them both and I'll weigh them both.
According to their Exeter Chiefs profile as well, Witten is 2 inches taller and 5 kg heavier.
Hang on, so what are they classing Witten as? Like
6'2".
And Hendrickson's bigger than 6 foot.
105 kg. Hendrickson is 6 foot.
Look at him.
You played this
He's
game
He's in
before.
Isolation. I'm just telling you what I saw with my own eyes from watching these boys and what has been confirmed by two independent sources. So we now have 3 points of data contradicts...
Oh, yeah. That looks like Ian Witten. Look at him. Like Dave Ewers.
Guy... Jibby, you were wrong about Sam Simmons.
I was right about Sam Simmons.
You're wrong about Sam Simmons. You're wrong about Witten. You're wrong about Hendrickson.
Yeah, he's massive.
Look at the quads on the lad.
He's a big boy. Yeah. He's 2 inches shorter and 5 kg lighter than Ian Witten.
That's a story. I mean, maybe Ian Witten's let himself go.
Ian Witten is prime Northern Irish beef.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, this is actually a good point, the perfect point, in fact, to mention another email we've got, because it's about the weight. More rugby weight watchers is the title of the email from Sam Fitzpatrick. And he said, Big Mac from Always Sunny vibes here. Phil will enjoy this one, I'm sure. And he sent us a link to the Northampton Chronicle talking about Tom Collins feeling sharper as he now hits his fighting weight.
What is this fight? So Tom Collins.
Tom Collins is wiry and small.
87 kilograms.
I think he'll be like 83 or 85, okay, something like that.
Well, Tom Collins has been saying that back end of last season to the start of this season, he's been fluctuating. Last year, in the first lockdown, he went from 82 kgs.
What did I say, 80?
You said 89.
Oh. So Phil was said 83. So they're up to 100 kgs.
Tom Collins.
Tom Collins went to 100.
That's heavy.
That is bad. For him to get there in that time, that's bad weight.
He said, all of a sudden, I've gone all the way back down again to 81 or 82.
Yeah, that's...
He said, I just tested the water with the weight gain. And it's a funny story because I sort of aimed to put some weight on in the first lockdown. And I really struggled, unlike most people during lockdown. He was like, I can't keep it on. And all of a sudden, it was like a snowball effect. And before I knew it, I was 96 kg and I'd piled on the weight. I came back and actually felt okay, but trying to get around on the pitch wasn't ideal. He said his girlfriend kept having a go at him because he kept turning on the Nutribullet to eat something else. And his whole life was just gym, eat.
How
interesting. Go outside and do a field session and then eat again.
So... Yeah, if I ballooned up by 10 kilograms, it wouldn't be because I'm Nutribulleting and working out. But I believe him when he says he is. Because also, lean men as well tend to put on muscle a lot quicker. So maybe he just got absolutely jacked.
But he's gone back down again, and he's happy. He's happy back around low 80s.
Yeah, if 81 up to 96 or close to 100, 15 plus kg, that's 2 stone.
Yeah, that's not muscle. I mean, it could be.
Even if you put it all on, I mean... To put it on in that time frame for muscle, you might need some...
And as a percentage, that's like... Yeah. That must be like 20%,
yeah.
1/6, 1/7 of his body weight in a matter of weeks.
Well, let's ask no more questions and move on from this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The Nairavoro diet, no doubt.
Yeah.
I saw some Northampton players on Thursday morning.
Oh, tell me more.
I didn't do anything with that information. I just... strolled past them as I was getting off the train at Euston at 8:30 on Thursday morning.
Which ones?
There were three Northampton players. Looking like, because they had a week off, looking like they were going to have a fun weekend in London.
So
they weren't on. They weren't heading back to Northampton from London. They were.
They could have been. To be fair, they could have been. But
when was it? Sorry, what day?
You tell us which ones.
It's 8:30 on Thursday morning. I can tell you which ones if you want.
Go on.
It was senior players.
Big Courts. Did you say hello to him?
I was. So my train was delayed, so I was running late for a meeting. Otherwise, I would have said, because JB says hi. Yeah,
exactly. Who?
So hold on. Who would have been with Big Courts?
Is that the podcaster who sells Forex? The right wing. the right wing podcaster.
I'm gonna go. Big Courts was with Tom Wood.
Correct. Yeah. 2 out of 2. One more. Another senior player.
I would say it's gonna be Waller.
Correct.
Three out of three.
The boys were there.
Absolutely nailing it.
I was like, God, that bloke's big. Oh, that's Connie Laws. Oh, and he's with
Tom Wood.
Oh, and he's with Alex Waller.
Yeah, big lads.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, they'd be what a good crack they'd be. Chuck Dan Bigger in the mix as well, and I reckon you'd have an absolute.
Dan Bigger doesn't drink, mate.
Dan Bigger,
he's too pure.
Might be, yeah, actually, that's true, but he might be the nicest rugby player I've ever met.
Yeah, he is very nice, isn't he?
Incredibly nice.
Can we talk about Bristol now?
Yes.
Just before we depart Exeter, shall we very briefly touch upon the thing, because it's people will be expecting us to just contribute to a debate which seems to be happening everywhere, whether you want it to or not.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? If you want it to or not. So I consumed all of the rugby this weekend. I actually forgot that this was a story until BT Sport brought it up again. What are they playing at? You know, what is their mission in all of this? They're here to sell the game. They're here to promote the game. And they're running this absolute nonsense story. It's a farce of an organisation. I think everyone involved in pushing this has just been cowardly. You need to be standing up and saying, no, Exeter are not racists. No, cultural appropriation was something which only was invented like 3 weeks ago. And all of a sudden they've got experts on it and all sorts of... No, it's not what you need to be covering. And what did BT Sport actually add to this? They brought on two experts who both argue in the same side of the argument. Oh, thank you for educating me. There was no part of the BT Sports segment which was there to give you information. It was there to persuade. I thought it was awful. I thought the whole thing was awful. I thought Wasps' statement...
I was going to say Wasps were the ones that brought this up, because in the week of the game, and this is one thing which Rob Baxter raised, he sort of said, I'm not sure bringing it up the week you're playing a team is particularly good form. And I thought that was pretty...
I
didn't like that. I didn't like the way it was done from Wasps. But Wasps were the ones that brought it into the conversation.
Yeah, I'm going to slightly stand up for Wasps on this, in a way. Look, I hate the fact that they released a statement midweek which basically word soup. It didn't make really much sense. I hate the way that they've engaged with the so-called fan group. And by the way, the fan group, it's actually the podcast there. Absolutely fine. You know, if they want to say these things, if they want to express that opinion, absolutely fine. But they don't represent all Wasps fans. And I don't even think that Wasps should be doing this thing where they try and hang out one club and basically scapegoat them or make them look like a bunch of racists or some of the worst things in society. Exeter have done more for rugby over the last 10 years than pretty much any other club has. So I didn't like that. But I'm torn on it because I do have an awful lot of respect for Wasps as an organisation, and particularly their CEO. So, you know, I just don't think they should be doing this stuff. I think they're dragging the sport through the mud for no reason.
Hmm.
I like a phrase from Stephen Fry. He said, "It's now very common to hear people say, 'I'm rather offended by that,' as if that gives them certain rights. It's actually nothing more than a whine. I find that offensive. It has no meaning. It has no purpose. It has no reason to be respected as a phrase. I'm offended by that. Well, so effing what?"
Yeah, look, we've turned this phrase on its head, haven't we? I've said this loads of times. I understand why... I don't understand why there's rugby against racism on all the shirts. I'm pretty happy to say we don't have a racism problem in rugby. I'm fine with saying that, actually. But I understand why...
Well, more's the point. Wherever it exists, one of the things I'm quite proud of with rugby is it isn't accepted and stewards don't turn a blind eye. Fans in the stand don't turn a blind eye. It's rooted out. It's just not
a thing.
You can't say that there is no racism anywhere at any time, because that's it exists across the world. But the rugby is a place where I've never seen it. But if I have, if it ever has been said or seen or whatever, I'm absolutely certain it's been dealt with appropriately.
We have changed the meaning of the word racism from something which is derogatory, insulting, discriminatory, to when you put a badge on your shirt, which is actually the highest honour. No one calls their sports team something because they want to mock themselves. It's quite the opposite. It's the highest honour. You know, it is literally the opposite of what these people are claiming.
Well, so some people would say, we don't have the right to, you don't have the right to offer that opinion.
Fine, because, they don't have the right to eat Chinese food. It's absolute nonsense. And we all know it's nonsense. And you know, you're listening to a tiny, tiny minority. And the worst part from BT... I mean, BT Sport should be ashamed of themselves. The stuff which they've been propagating recently, you know, on the anti-online hate stuff, or the rugby against racism stuff, or just any kind of political thing they can get their hands on. It's an absolute sham organisation from that point of view. And they shouldn't have done this on a bloody rugby show. It's an absolute disgrace. They should be talking about rugby, not the latest political fad. And as they even said, we're not qualified to talk about this. You think? No, you're not.
Well, I would obviously defend it and say that they were reflecting the story which Wasps brought into the arena, and had they not covered it, people would have said, oh, this is a whitewash, a sham, you need to...
No, yeah, and do you know who would be saying that? The tiny minority who they're pandering to. And they're so cowardly that they don't want to be called some ist or some phobia or something phobic. They went and ruined their rugby programme. You know, you've got Bath, who suffered a record defeat. You've got big spending Bristol, who have lost God knows how many. You've got the resurgence of Leicester Tigers. You've got Saracens ripping up trees. You've got the England squad tomorrow. You've got all this stuff. And this is what you did. You're an absolute disgrace.
Go on, Phil.
I'm just going to say we're risking doing the same because we've now spent longer than we ever should have done
on the headdress thing, for example. I wouldn't wear one.
I would.
I think it's.
I
wouldn't wear one because I think that is unacceptable for someone who's not Native American Indian to wear one. I wouldn't because I think that it's naff when you do it.
Well, look,
like that.
The closest I get to wearing a team shirt, except for Talk
8. Yeah, I was going to say I don't even wear a rugby shirt to rugby games.
Is my Sail Sharks pin badge as a neutral, as you well know.
Did you have a Sail Sharks scarf?
It's very cold. It's the first scarf I could find. No, the reason I wouldn't wear. Look, I've never liked the Exeter Chiefs branding.
No, truth be told.
But I'm standing 100% behind it because they're not racist. And calling Tony Rowe or anyone the worst thing you can call him in society is absolutely appalling.
That is the line I would draw. Yeah, I agree with that because actually, like I can say you can. Do I mind if they change the? I don't care if they change their brand. I don't care. I'm not bothered either way. But you cannot level the worst thing you can say about someone at that rugby club. That's where I draw the line. Otherwise, do I need to return my Red Wing boots that I bought the other week?
Yes,
because they are
given to me.
They are moccasin.
Given to me because otherwise, you know, otherwise you're going to struggle to work in broadcasting with those boots. So the best thing you can do is give them to me.
Mm.
Get some trainers.
Get some trainers, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But don't get Nike ones, which are made by children in Brazil.
Yeah. Did you see Dogger's trainers?
He has some cool trainers, doesn't he?
He did have some cool trainers. He can get away with it a bit more than some.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, he is a cool dude.
I'm fully aware, and this is where respectful disagreement is absolutely at the heart of this podcast and should be at the heart of any civilised society. People, there will be people listening that strongly disagree, but that's okay. That's okay. Yeah. I don't think any less of someone who disagrees with what you've said, and I don't think any less of you if I were to disagree. And that's as it should be.
I think less of them because
I think less of anyone who says Tony Rowe is racist.
Absolutely.
The club is racist. I totally think less of
absolutely.
People.
They are cowards. They are absolute cowards. There's no other word for it. And they're following some trendy agenda. And just on to the thing about our rugby show compared to BT Sports. We did an hour and five minutes of rugby content before we did this.
Yeah,
and we only did
true.
It in response to the absolute abhorrent nature of covering the story.
I think the BT Sport coverage is outstanding. And I think, as I say, they are reflecting the story which Wasps brought into the arena. And had Wasps not done that, they wouldn't have mentioned it, but you've got to understand the point of view of a broadcaster, and you might and you could argue you might say and you might make the argument that it's that they that a newspaper or a broadcaster should have the strength to ignore it, but those conversations are really tough to have, and if you ignore it, then you're just going to get hammered from a different angle. Yeah.
My view on this is they do it, they speak this woke language as sort of signal to each other that they're middle class. It's basically replaced what posh accents used to be. This is, you know, this is what we stand for now. We are one of you, and you know, it makes sure they don't have to address the real issues in rugby, because rugby's got loads of issues, from grassroots participation to not enough people in the stadium.
I mentioned,
and
then
just whitewash it all by saying,
I mentioned it the other week when I talked about Ardell Cardooney, who, by the way, I didn't realize,
Iranian.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you for the people that let me know his nationality. But there you go. We brought that up the other week. That's one thing rugby could focus on solving. Why do we not have anyone from Asian or the Indian subcontinent area or Middle East? Or why do we have so few people from that background?
Well, I think rugby.
And how can we reach out to those communities and share our game with them?
Well, I'm pretty sure I know how we don't reach out to our communities, which is by using a font on Twickenham, the urban font, because apparently that appeals to people who aren't middle class. And actually, it's just rankly patronising. So yeah, look.
But when I say that point, I'm saying there are lots of things we can solve which are on that inclusion spectrum.
Can I talk about?
And I would love for everyone to to have the ability to play rugby and enjoy what we love about it.
Can I talk about something tangentially linked to this?
Okay. But and then we will move on, Phil, I promise.
It is about discipline in rugby and the regulation of rugby and how we're regulating people out of the game. So I was away last week with Phil and the issue of red cards came up. And I didn't realise this, and I should realise this, because I actually got banned myself, but I can't remember how long I got banned for. Was it one match ban or... But I just swallowed it and said, yeah, fine. And also, I think there was a fine attached to it, but I don't think I paid my fine. I think the club paid it. I don't know. But one of the guys I was talking to, 36, probably because of the age group we were with, he falls through a ruck, headbutts someone, doesn't headbutt someone, but makes head contact with someone. And he explains that he fell through a ruck, and that's it. Anyway, he gets a red card. First red card he's ever had, according to him. He gets an £80 fine. And at that point, he goes, no, I'm not paying it. Not only am I not paying it, you've ruined my weekend. I can't play with my mates for the next three weekends. I'm not doing it. And I think he's got a point. I think we need to have a look at this discipline, because we're begging players to come back. Then you fall through a ruck, and they charge you £80.
Who mentioned that, or where was he playing? You don't need to say.
It was a club in Leeds.
Okay.
And he's a prop. Yeah. And he went to university with you, Phil.
Club in Leeds? You're playing a club in, not a club in Edinburgh?
No, Leeds.
Okay.
No, Leeds.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. I thought that's a really good point. If I came back for third team or something, I fell through a record, someone tried to charge me £80, or say I couldn't play next week, I'd just say, no, I'm not going to play at all. So,
yeah.
I'll see you later.
Well, and this ties in almost with something we said more broadly, which I know... intent isn't part of the decision-making matrix for decisions, but I do think it's relevant.
So
I absolutely think intent is relevant.
So it is. They try as much as possible to keep it out of the on-field decision-making. It is considered in the off-field decision-making, and determining bans and all the rest of it definitely is considered. But it's only, and I think you have to keep it away from the off-field decision.
I think the pro game, they probably have the right... the criteria, unless I can't, only not because I think it's right, it's because I can't think of a better one. I can't think of what, but the amateur game, certainly.
If you swing a punch or you blind, like, I've got no sympathy.
Yeah,
like okay, you don't want to take that fine and mine, well, jog on.
Mine wasn't a punch, only because I fell over though on the way.
You tried to punch someone.
I would have punched someone probably, but I fell over on the way. So you know, it is what it is.
Well, that's even worse in my book.
Yeah,
like I'd say. Attempted murder should get an even harsher. If you're not good enough to execute through with your plans,
life sentence for the murder and then an extra 10 for being incompetent.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we shouldn't reward incompetence. Bristol, or rather Newcastle.
But before we talk about Bristol, I think we've got an email somewhere, haven't we? Someone taking me to task
about
Bristol.
About Bristol.
From Ed.
Oh, Ed Whittaker, bear baiting.
Oh, he's not happy as our Ed.
Morning, guys. First time up. I'm a long-time listener and genuinely enjoy the content. Oh, sorry, I move on from all that. Maybe I'm an oversensitive fan, but I feel like there's been quite a lot of inconsistent opinions regarding the Bears. Salary distribution. Is the problem that our two marquee players are too good and the divide is too far? Take them out, assuming it's Sir Charles and Semi, and I think the distribution is actually pretty good. Luatua, our captain, deservedly on very good money, and the internationals brought in Sinclair and Hughes will be on the market rate for England players. For the neutrals, let's compare Sale. Top end, huge money on Faf and Lude. Good money on long-standing foreign captain Ross, and England money on Manu. The makeup of most teams, bar Sarries, is pretty similar. We also get criticised on the pod for sticking with the Bristol way when other clubs get praised for having an identity and sticking to it. Exeter, Sarries, Leicester, Quins. What's the difference? Also, we're widely derided for giving Lamb a long-term contract, but I also don't see that being vastly different to other clubs. Mark McCall and Rob Baxter have seemingly been in position for decades, and what choice do we have? Not give him a long contract and lose him to international rugby? I appreciate we are not currently playing well, but you can't write off the players and the coaches that were getting lauded 4 months ago. We've sold 10,000 season tickets and the rebrand has worked with hats and Bears stash seen all over the city for the first time in my memory. If the choice is life under Lamb or going back to Robinson/Holly, then I'm happy with what we have. That said, I've every faith that Pat and the squad will develop and we will challenge again. It's worth mentioning when talking about Bristol squad that we've been royally shafted by the academy catchment areas. It's basically been the city of Bristol with neighbouring Bath, Gloucester and Exeter having vast, vast geographical catchments and this has been slightly improved recently, but we won't see the effect of that for years. Good email, Ed.
Fair points. All well, fair
he does
points.
Say, keep up the good work. Give us a shout when you're next in Bristol. I'd love to grab a beer with you.
Forget it. Not a chance.
Which I'd love to, Ed.
100% would love
definitely.
To.
Definitely. Negronis.
Well, okay. So I think they're all fairly good points, actually. I do not think that the bottom end of the Bristol squad is very good. It's not very good. They seem to require their match winners for everything to click.
I'm mixed on the bottom end because there's some guys that they've brought in over the last few years who have performed so well. Guys like, say, Dan Thomas or Henry Purdy is a great example. I think Henry Purdy, since he's been there,
who's the hooker? Oh,
Brian Byrne?
Thacker.
Will Capon,
for example, Kerr. Another one. So, yeah. Well, what I would say, the things you were talking about Wasps and praising them for earlier actually is what we were saying about Bristol a year and a half ago.
Except for Wasps.
When Ed Joyce was rampaging around, and sorry, Joe Joyce and Will Capon were rampaging around, and guys like that, and Dan Thomas.
I think that's fair, right? But I don't think it's Wasps that Bristol should be comparing themselves to. Bristol needs to be comparing themselves to Exeter, Saracens, Sale. Now, I couldn't have praised Wasps any more highly on their playing side. But they do the best with what they've got. It looks like Bristol are sort of trying to emulate that to some degree, where I think they should be a lot better. For the amount of money that they spend, for the size of the stadium, for all the good things.
Did you see the 15 at the weekend, though?
It wasn't good.
Yeah, you say for all the money you spend, money was not on the pitch.
There was virtually no money on the pitch in this game.
That's kind of the problem, isn't it? So Nathan Hughes on England money, that's not true.
Oh, yeah, he...
That's not an England player.
There's lots of clubs where you've had very expensive players that are not performing to the level you'd expect. Yeah. Nathan Hughes is a prime example, and he will not be a marquee player. He can't be a marquee player because he came from another Premiership club, and rumoured reports on his salary means he alone is 1/12 of the entire salary cap.
Yeah.
Now, so, but he, if he's playing well... is the best of both, because he's an England standard player when he's playing well.
Yep.
He's a capped international, but he's not in the England squad. So if he's playing well, that...
What's 1/12 expressed as a percentage, Phil?
About 8.5.
Okay, yeah. So you've got an 8.5% swing. If he's not there and can't even justify his place in the team, you lose it. If you gain him, he's disproportionately... more effective than that 8.5%.
Yeah.
It's a huge hole. Just him alone is a massive hole in that Bristol side.
And by the way, it's not that other clubs have not made bad signings in the past. They have. Mm-hmm. I just think the state of the Premiership at the moment, a bad signing is far, far more harshly punished.
Yeah. And a bad signing on...
Totally agree.
A bad signing on 120k is one thing. Yeah. A bad signing on 500k, or certainly someone who is not pulling their weight on 500k.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah, so we've just got... When you are in that building, so I don't think there's as big a gap between the lowest paid guy, mind you, lowest paid guy in the sales squad this week is probably going to be Raffy or
Tom Curtis.
Tom Curtis,
the winning pen,
and probably the highest paid is going to be maybe Manu, but I don't think he's a marquee. I mean,
Manu can't be a marquee.
Yes, that's a good point. He can't, can he? So it can't be him. So say, for instance, say if it's Faf.
Faf would be a marquee.
Faf passing the ball to Tom Curtis might be a bit odd. But, you know, I guess that, you know,
Faf on 20 times what Tom Curtis is on?
Yeah, I'd say so. I would guess that, yeah.
It'd be roughly.
Well, it's like me and Chris Evans at Virgin Radio.
What, you get paid 20 times more than Chris Evans?
I wouldn't be doing this.
That's incredible.
It's your collection of Ferraris.
Or we'd be doing the pod on my super yacht.
So, I think one of the points about Bristol is, and this is a point that they've made, Pat Lam has made, and the players have made, and over time, last season certainly, it kind of came true. When they had bad results last season, they said, no, trust the process, things will go against us, we'll get back on track. And I kind of flippantly said it last week that perhaps they are regressing to their mean, and that the true mean is, well, actually terrible, and the aberration was finishing top of the league and making the playoffs.
But that wasn't the aberration because they won the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, and I don't actually think it is. I think they're a good team. I think the team that they got out this weekend is by everyone's standard, not a good team because there is so. If you just looked at the salaries of the guys on the pitch,
possibly would have lost against
anyone bar Worcester.
This weekend,
yeah, and maybe even lost against Worcester, but maybe not. I think there are definitely now question marks over Pat Lam, but I think they've got enough talent and enough squad to rectify things across what is a long season, and I think they will come good. Whether they will make top four this season, I think it is already slipping away from them. That is a problem. That is a problem after doing it last year, and the quality and talent they undoubtedly have right across the squad. That is a difficult position to be in.
So just on the top four, I think they're still in contention because everybody is slipping up. And even someone as good as Leicester at the moment, who are unbeaten, I still don't think that they are. They've got the best start of any Leicester team ever, I think.
5 from 5, 3 bonus points, 23 points.
It's what they're doing at the moment is mega, but I still don't believe that they are a top class team. I think they are fallible. I think they've done a great job. I think they're all fallible, and I think you see that in the scores. The fact that Exeter have lost, the fact that Saracens have even lost.
Saracens lost to Leicester.
Everyone has lost, so they are kind of lucky in that respect because you don't have to be catching three teams that are unbeaten, for instance, or three mega teams. The problem is, of course, you've got other peer clubs around you who are now in the same position, and they want to advance. I think Bristol can still make top four. Style of play, that is a little bit more concerning to me because they prioritise different things to other clubs. I don't think that Saracens and Exeter, I know that Leicester don't, they don't prioritise first and foremost their attack. Pat Lam does prioritise his attack, and he said it on record. He said, I know when my team's playing well because the defence will catch up with the attack, i.e. we'll start conceding less tries. Whereas everyone else kind of does it the other way around. Let's get the defence rock solid and then we'll build up on our attack. So I would worry about that.
I'd love to know what the... I can't think what the timescale was when Pat Lam had his little thing on the touchline at Leicester.
It was towards the end of last season. It was about, let's say, April time. It was
two games out from playoffs.
Two or three games out from playoffs.
Was it after the Challenge Cup win?
No, I think it was before that.
Okay, because if it had been immediately after the Challenge Cup win, you could almost argue that it was...
Yeah.
That was a sliding doors moment.
Now, here is the other thing, and I've got to be careful what I say here, but I'll give you as much as I can. If you sign for a coach, say if you sign for Cockerell, you know exactly what you get from Cockerell, don't you? He's going to be hard, he's going to tell you exactly how it is. It's going to be a tough old time, and you better be ready for it. If you sign for, Alex Sanderson, yes, he's a tough taskmaster and all the rest of it, but there's always no brotherhood stuff and all the psychology stuff.
You know you're going to be judged on work rate.
Yeah, so Sanderson's not
an effort.
Yeah, Sanderson's not a great example there, but I'm just trying to think of different coaching
styles. So Chris Boyd, if you go and sign for Chris Boyd, you might do so because you want to develop your skills.
Yeah, so if you sign for Chris Boyd and you want to develop your skills, and actually it turns out Chris Boyd does nothing but do captain's runs with his first 15 because, he just wants to win that battle. And this actually happened in Worcester a few years ago. All the fringe players were not particularly happy because all they wanted to do was put out the strongest 15 they could every game to try and win something because relegation was a thing. And that result was... everyone else is really, really annoyed. So with Pat Lam, if he's writing love on the changing room wall, but actually it turns out that he's a little bit more controlling and a little bit more authoritarian, say, than you thought when he signed, then, that's a problem. I don't think people mind playing for Steve Diamond. I don't think they mind playing for Stuart Hooper. But I don't think they would like playing for Stuart Hooper if it turned out he was more like Richard Cockerell. And I think that is a problem. And I think at the moment there's a lot of pressure on Bristol internally, and I don't think it's a nice place for the players to be.
So I definitely agree with that point. Whether it's applicable to Pat Lam or not, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the authenticity point, you can be whatever you want to be, but be authentic.
Yeah.
And if you're not, if you're inauthentic, people find out.
100%.
I was wrong. Bristol's. I was thinking that Bristol's Challenge Cup win was the preceding season. It's actually the season before because it was October.
October
2020.
Did we watch it in Bath? Did we watch it in Bath?
We watched the semi-final in Bath.
Against Dragons?
No, was the semi-final against
Dragons? So could that bust up on the touchline have been a moment where...
I've got to say, that's a That's the point where I started having questions about Pat Lamb.
Yeah, and it was round 21. Yeah. So it was the week before the last round, and then 2 weeks before the
Harlequins defeat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, that's why I've got questions about him, because easiest thing in the world would say, yeah, I treated Ian Tempest wrong, but instead he said, oh, there'll be an RFU inquiry, it'll all come out in the wash, you'll see. I'm right. What is there to know? What are the extenuating circumstances that we need to know? We know, and I just had questions about him then, but you know, you just hear whispers that it's not a particularly nice place to be. Now, this is pure rumour, so you would have to...
I would just say that the salary cap environment is providing an amazing premiership. It also... The one thing that anyone in charge of a team needs is very delicate man management skills, because you are managing groups of players who might feel, particularly the guys who need to come in and perform, will feel under pressure because they don't know that they're more insecure about their future than they have been at any time in their career. And you can understand envy when you might have, and particularly a lot of players, Bristol weren't one of those clubs, but a lot of clubs had 25% pay cuts.
Yeah. Ironically, it might be the 25% pay cut which is making everything so competitive, because everyone can afford the salary cap now.
There's some clubs who didn't enforce it. But yeah, but there's players whose... things aren't looking as rosy for players as they were.
So they did enforce it and they didn't, in a way.
Yeah.
Because they re-signed deals.
They re-signed deals,
Only 75% of those deals counted.
Or they had to cut them for when the salary cap was reduced.
Well, no, because they grandfathered them in, right?
Yeah.
So the players never had to take a pay cut. So if you said, right, everyone's on 25% pay cut, I went, no, I'm not doing it. Now, you could get fired, like Manu Tuilagi was, or you took the 25% pay cut, or they back down and say, yeah, okay, we'll keep you. And then that salary cap number which you had will be reduced by 25% and grandfathered into the new salary cap. So not everybody took a cap hit. Here's where it gets really tricky, though. If you were smart, the day the Premiership said, shit, everyone needs to take a 25% pay cut or all go bankrupt, if you knew you could afford it, you got everybody to take a pay cut immediately, and then that new figure was grandfathered in at 25% less than the new figure.
So you gave you dropped everyone down.
By 10%, say.
And then give yourself 25% under the head.
Exactly.
So potentially Bristol have stitched themselves up a little bit.
By
being great employers.
Well, they were spending more. So the way you would do it, hypothetically, right, is you would trade off years on a contract for a little less money. So if you're going to be smart about it, you would say the salary cap's dropping by 25%, lads. Everybody is going to get a 25% pay cut. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a 10% pay cut right now, but you will trade that for two extra years on your contract. We'll extend you all. Yeah, okay, because all players want an extension. So they get an extension. You get your 10% drop, but then that's grandfathered in at 25% less. Boom. We're in business.
Yeah, but that, in theory, keeps everyone happy.
Until 4 years down the road when...
Yeah, when you can't afford to keep the players because you can't then grandfather them in again. You have to then drop them.
Or they're not good enough.
Yeah. And lots of things happen and people will leave anyway and people get injured.
Here's the thing. If you've got your whole squad now on extended contracts, a test case for the argument for contractual stability, just by accident. What happens to a team which you just keep together for 5 years and come what may?
But there's a balance there it's a trade-off between, if you've got a four-year deal, not every single player is going to be training as hard. Some will always train hard. You give them a 20-year deal, they'll be training as hard. Yeah. Some people, if they've got a four-year deal, they'll be thinking about retirement, they'll be easing back. They're not as hungry.
And the only person I would ever take advice from on contract matters in rugby union,
it's me.
Aside from you, JB, would be Chris Ashton, because that guy's the Midas touch.
Exactly.
He signed for Worcester just before lockdown and everything kicked in, just before COVID.
Good lad.
The man, his timing's incredible.
Isn't it just?
Is he still at Worcester?
Yeah.
But just not playing?
Doesn't need to, does he? He's got a long-term contract.
A big long-term contract.
Yeah, I don't know what his contract is, but he'll do all right out of it.
Yeah, no doubt.
We haven't mentioned...
We've not mentioned Friday night.
Friday night.
Astonishing.
Broughton Park's Raffy Quirk dominating in front of Eddie Jones.
Amazing, isn't it? So I thought Harlequins would win this. So it's kind of bittersweet. One of the things I thought is that Danny Kerr, I have seen Danny Kerr take Faf de Klerk's lunch money. And he did it easily, actually. Mm-hmm. He absolutely mugged him off down at the stoop about two years ago. And I kind of think, well, that guy's the top Premiership try scorer outside of the back three. He's absolutely incredible. He's a Premiership champion. He's a two-time champion.
He's got
50-odd caps.
Yeah, more, I think.
He can take this plucky kid. No problem. Incorrect. Rafi was absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And
huge
I think
plus.
If Sale had slightly better hands, they probably would have run away with this, actually. The way that they dealt with the majority of the Harlequins' attacks, I thought was very, very good.
Yeah, the Dupree boys can monster people, but... bit of catching practice.
Yeah, a lot of catching practice.
A bit of offloading practice for the Dupree boys again.
Yeah, they're good at what they do, aren't they? They're very,
very,
good at
very effective at what they do.
Yeah.
Well, I think the point that you've made there, JB, about the way that Sale shut down Quinns, and I don't mean... I think I've read it a couple of times, almost like a lazy... Oh, Sale beat them up front, therefore.
Yeah.
Marcus Smith had no time, he was getting back football.
Which isn't true, actually.
Yeah, I don't think... So Sale obviously scored... they scored the John O'Ross pushover try, and they had some good... They made some good ground from driving Moles. But generally, the upfront battle was... It was at least close to even for the majority of the game.
Agreed.
The bit that I was really impressed with the Sale team was their defensive read of the back line and shutting down Marcus Smith, but not only Marcus Smith. They were shutting down the options outside Marcus Smith for most of the game. And the two men that I think probably deserve most of the credit would be Sam James and Byron McGuigan,
when
he was on the open
friend
side.
Friend of the pod, BMAC, was awesome.
There was a few times where he read... Marcus Smith had the out the back ball and he jumped the line to take the option of the out-the-back ball totally out of the game. And Marcus Smith then, his only option was either a long pass or kick. But because he's under total pressure, because Manu or a Curry or a Dupree is charging him down, he's not got enough time to execute. I thought that was the biggest part of Sale,
yeah,
that
so
defensive shape.
Is so hard.
He's awesome, isn't he? And he does that a lot. So if you look at the amount of interception tries that he's scored, it's right up there. Because he's always making the... Do you know he defends a lot like Chris... A lot like Chris Harris. Chris Harris is always making reads that you shouldn't be making or in places that you shouldn't be. But then you realise, actually, he's really good.
How does Scotland develop these players?
It's weird, isn't it? They must have one hell of a system.
I'll tell you what, well, they do, clearly, because Edinburgh beat one of the South African teams this weekend. And I saw a little bit of it, and... The two Scottish props, Schumann and Nell, destroyed the South Africans.
Incredible stuff.
So just goes to show, people think South Africa is this big scrummaging nation. Scotland's where it's at. Schumann and Nell, awesome.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. I think what is interesting about this game is Sale turned it away from individual battles. I don't think many individuals at Sale had a particularly great game. I thought the team played well.
Yeah.
But you didn't see, like, Manu's going to dominate.
No.
Tom Curry did lots of Tom Curry things.
So
I'd be frightened. I'd be legit frightened if I had to stand opposite him when he just snarling.
Yeah.
He runs so angrily.
So I can't...
I love it.
I can't really tell you much about this game because it's the first game that I went to at the AJ Bell as a fan. Of the game.
Of the game,
of
yeah.
Of the game in general.
Of Marcus Smith.
Yeah, so I went actually with...
your neutral pin.
With my neutral pin in.
And scarf.
Scarf. I went with a Harlequins fan and my friend from Talk H. And I had a few beers. So I didn't watch it with as keen an eye as usually I would. But I didn't think...
Not up in the gantry with AJ this time.
No. Things have changed around there now. So I didn't notice Tom Curry doing... Tom Curry things.
No, he was
tired. So he played well. He did. There was two stupid penalties gave away. I think early in the second half, maybe after about 45 to 55 minutes. There was two repeated. They're both in a very narrow window. But besides that, he was
the shape
he was Tom
Curry.
It is terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Terrifying.
So, to counter that, I also didn't think Don Brandt was particularly effective.
And Marcus Smith was quiet.
No, someone did get in touch with us and say... can you just put an appeal out for Alex Donbrandt, last seen at 7:45 in Manchester?
Yeah, don't know where he went.
I think it's right, very few players stood out in this game.
It was
who stood out? John O'Ross getting another yellow card, that makes him stand out, but it's just normal. Other than that,
no, not. And I think
even like Tom Curtis, who obviously slotted the winning goal, he had three shots to win the game. He had three kicks and missed two and slotted one.
Yeah, if AJ was playing for Sale, that Quinns wouldn't have got a losing bonus. No, that game would have been
Tom Curtis miss a kick?
He missed two.
He missed a couple.
He missed...
But he got one.
Wasn't that Wilkinson that missed the kicks?
No.
Really? Wilkinson did miss kicks as well.
Yeah.
In
the last 10 minutes, Tom Curtis had three kicks at goal.
Tell you what,
he slotted the middle one, missed the other two.
Sale have got a fascinating battle for the backup fly half.
Third choice fly half.
Yeah, so here's a question for you. Andy Goode.
Great bloke.
Tweeted at Tom Curtis saying all those days spent practising at Worcester really paid off. Why would he say that to Tom Curtis?
Did Andy Goode took him under his wing?
Come on, think about it. Do you know why? Why would Tom Curtis as a kid be practising at Worcester?
Curtis?
And bearing in mind, he's not even 20 yet, right? So when did Goody play at Worcester?
I'm trying to think. Whose surname was Curtis?
Six, seven years ago. Curtis.
Curtis, I think, is either the stepson. I think he's a stepson of, one, Dean Schofield. So Dean Schofield was playing that down there. Obviously, Tom Curtis must have been practicing his kicking.
Okay.
So I thought that was quite a nice little message from Goody.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Tom Curtis, I know I said this last week, is apparently a phenomenal kicker. I didn't notice that he missed some early kicks.
Well, he was only on for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I saw the bit when he came on, but I didn't see he missed it.
He missed the final. Then it was the conversion when the game was already won anyway.
So he had one kick. It was a tough kick, to be fair, from quite a way out. It was a penalty that he missed. Then he had a similar kick that he slotted, and then he had the conversion.
Get very excited about seeing these young kids. I get more excited about seeing them coming through than when when I read, like, oh, Manu's playing, oh, big deal.
It's good seeing Denny playing again, and like he had some tough old times there, but he looked good.
Yeah, it is good. I mean, yeah, he's coming along nicely. And I like the way Sanderson does stuff, you know. I like the way he sort of, you know, it's time for Denny to come back into the squad now, so I'm going to build him up for the next 2 weeks. I'm going to tell everyone the proudest moment we've had as a coach is getting him back and ready. He's been awesome. Because I don't know if he means it or not. I'm not saying he's disingenuous. I'm just saying if I was Denny, I'd be feeling, well, he's already over 6 foot tall, but I'd be feeling very, very tall going onto that field because I know that my coach has been talking me up and backing me and all the rest of it. I think it's a bit... So, back to the thing I said all the way at the start of the podcast about coaches looking for the extra 10%. The other bit I didn't say about that is it doesn't really matter what that extra 10% is as long as everyone else buys into it. It can be total nonsense, kind of like Saviour World. but if they're buying into it, it's not nonsense, is it?
It can be placebo. It could be sugar pills, but
it is great to see Denny back, actually, because to be honest, I wasn't sure we were going to see him back. I just wasn't sure. I was thinking that maybe Sale had passed him by, but no, there he is.
Will Raffy Quirk be in the England squad when Eddie Jones names it?
I think it's hard for him to be left out after the last few weeks.
England have been crying out for a new scrum half.
Little Harry Randall looked good.
By the way,
I called him
Little Harry Randall because I listened to Eddie Stevens, who always refers to him as Little Harry Randall.
Eddie Stevens.
Rugby Ranter Banter.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Do you know who I was thinking of then?
Eddie and Stevo.
Eddie and Stevo. It's
like, Eddie, why are they talking about Harry Randall?
Where can I find this audio? Yeah, George Merrick sold out Cawthorn's big time this week. Did you see it when Harry Randall skirted on the inside of Fernsey?
It wasn't Fernsey's fault.
It was absolutely George Merrick.
It would never have been Fernsey's
fault. I'm going to write a letter to have George Merrick removed from that squad. mess around with someone else's career, pal.
That was awesome by Randall.
Yeah, but it was. He's pretty quick.
The bright spark in an otherwise pretty dull game.
Yeah. Have you noticed that Raffy does this thing where he sort of pushes the ball?
Hold on, Broughton Park's Raffy Quirk.
Broughton Park's Raffy Quirk, yeah. North Manchester's Raffy Quirk. If you know.
Broughton Park's Raffy Quirk.
South Manchester.
South Manchester, yeah.
Broughton Park's Raffy Quirk will do.
So, have you noticed he pushes the ball into the floor first?
Does he?
Have you not noticed this?
No.
When he passes, pushes down.
Yeah, so he runs to the breakdown. I know some scrum offs just sweep it from the floor as soon as they get there. He doesn't. He sort of gets it and he forces the ball into the floor and then he moves it. Like, it's just an instantaneous thing. You've got to watch it, but he does. Mm. And I'm like, why does he do that? And I found out the reason that he does that. So
let Phil guess first.
Go on.
Me guess. Is it something to do with the law change where it's...
It is something to do with the law, yes. But not law change.
Well, I was going to think, say, the law change where previously hands-on were out, whereas a few years ago...
Daylight.
Yeah, which is very sensible, very simple, very good change.
That was always one of the questions you'd ask the ref before a game. Sir, when's the ball out? Hands-on or up?
Yeah,
You'll know.
I'll tell you when you.
You'd hear people, hands on, sir, hands on. Taking the nines like 2 meters away from the rook, taken out by a back row. Hands on.
That's exactly right. So he does it because you can't dummy from the back. But if you get your hands on it and push down, there's a chance that you draw them offside.
Okay.
So he changes his timing of when he throws.
Dan Robson does something in his own way as well. Who hopefully he's in the England squad as well. Dan Robson does a look round the corner before he's about to do a box kick. He does a little movement which could be construed as a dummy, but he makes it look like he's just looking. But the number of times he makes the
offside
jump.
Yeah.
So that, because I raised this with my mystery friend that I talked to about rugby, because I know exactly why he does that.
Mm.
It's to draw the opposition offside. But I think it's quite... I don't know if I'd do it every time, but he does it every time. It's like a learned behaviour. But no, he's just trying to draw the guys offside because he can't lift it and dummy it.
I will watch out for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd be surprised if he's not in the England squad. But then the England nine choices over the past few years have consistently surprised me, namely the fact that Ben Youngs has always had his place.
Remember when Maunder was in?
Yeah.
Maunder was in and Townsend was in one
and
squad.
Townsend was in one squad,
at one point.
I like Maunder.
Willie Hines has been...
Willie Hines.
I like Willie Hines.
Yeah. Ben Spencer, but then Owen Farrell hates him.
Owen Farrell must loathe him.
Who else? Robson's been in and out. Kerr's been in and out.
Randall played in the summer.
Wigglesworth, a couple of years ago, got a call back.
It is interesting, isn't it, that on Friday night, you basically saw the future of English rugby, albeit on opposite teams. Quirk to Smith.
Smith.
It's kind of delicious.
Hmm.
Bit lightweight. But I mean, I don't know what you expect from halfbacks, but it is a bit lightweight.
Yeah, but if you've got a back row that includes at least one Curry boy,
that's true,
and Underhill, and you've got someone like Laws and
Big
Itoje,
calls will take care of it.
Yeah, and in a few years' time, Ted Hill and George Martin.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll be all right.
They'll be fine. I'm always astonished though because they're so young. Like there was a time when Rafi had his hands on the ball and the referee had blown his whistle or whatever, and you just got these two absolute giants from Harlequins. I don't know which ones they were. They're trying to rough him up and get the ball off him. I'm like, he's 19. I would be terrified.
What I'm impressed by is the depth of him.
Yeah,
he's well developed.
He's a little tank, isn't he?
He's a little tank of a man. Yeah.
Yeah. But I tell you who is like that as well. I mean, he does look small, and he is small.
And I do like. And fair play, you have been talking him up for literally years.
Yeah. Who?
Broughton Park's Rafi Quirk.
Well, the guy who is similar to that, and he's very small, and he's still very small, and he's small even now, he's what, 22, is Kieran Wilkinson. He was my first ever interview, I think, down at Sale Sharks. Him and Aaron Reid, when they were just like literally doing, they were literally the only guys available, and they were about 17. And you just every time I see him, he's just a little bit. A little bit bigger.
Not Tom Collins bigger, though.
Not Tom Collins bigger. And you ask him, like, oh, you're looking good, Miggies. Yeah, the armour. He's still tiny. He's still absolutely tiny, but he thinks it's armour, so good for him. Yeah, I was very worried, I've got to say. Rafi was excellent. He proved me wrong. But Rafi on Kerr, you know, just based on that, you'd think Kerr. And then Smith versus Wilkinson, you think it's Smith all day long.
Yeah.
Just shows, isn't it? Team game.
Doesn't yeah. Absolutely, and Smith was put under a lot of pressure, and he didn't have his best game. Yeah.
I didn't see any London Irish. Stop letting me down like that, Irish. Come
pathetic,
on.
Pathetic, isn't it?
But in the Rainbow Cup, whatever it is.
UFC.
UFC.
Did they play?
Yeah.
It's still the three Irish provinces at the top,
all three unbeaten.
Then the Scottish ones with Ospreys in there.
Glasgow are up there.
Glasgow and Edinburgh are up there. You've got a South African team up there.
Somewhere. I'm just looking now. Just got it up. Stormers. Benetton. Two from four. They've lost against Ospreys and Ulster. But Ulster, who are currently top because they keep sneaking. They just sneak out bonus points every single time. They're scoring like four tries a game. Just efficient. Another four try win against the Lions this week. Not amazing. Scored one of the easiest set piece tries off a line out that you'll ever see. You'll like it, JB.
Oh, excellent.
Little pop to my first lifter, loose head prop, Warwick, and he just pops inside to Timoney, who's acting scrum half, and it was just one, two, and he just flops over.
Too easy.
So easy. But one of the big things for Ulster, maybe Fryland, perhaps not so much, but Will Addison, bad.
Another injury.
Ankle.
Oh, no.
Injury again. It doesn't,
some guys
doesn't
just
look great.
I have no luck.
Yeah. He plays too hard and he's unlucky.
Yeah, so. I think everyone gets unlucky to an extent, but he sometimes needs to take a little bit off.
Yeah, agreed.
His game, because he's such a good player.
So some other news. Talk H1 again. So
ding ding.
Unbeaten in five.
Nice. Yeah, like the Leicester Tigers.
I saw an under 14s team. One of the best under 14s teams I've seen filed. Were oh my goodness, they've got some serious players. There's a couple there. There's a couple there. I went. Filed first team in 5 years.
Yeah. So on the 18th.
Well, Sale first team, and some of them might be going
to. Exactly. Well, so on the 18th.
God, you talk about a big catchment area. Sale have got
Leeds.
got Blackpool, Liverpool, Manchester.
Sale is a bloody good team at the moment. I mean, regional rugby wise. Have you been following the travels of Blackburn?
I haven't. You mentioned this a few weeks
good
ago.
Good God. There was a video of them scrummaging going on the other week against Vale of Loon, who are no mugs. And they absolutely destroyed them. And I've heard quite a few reports. I've not played against Blackburn.
Is Nick Flynn playing for Blackburn now then?
No, Nick Flynn ran a marathon.
Marathon, Manchester Marathon.
Marathon. Yeah. What? He looks...
For anyone, Nick Flynn is a former teammate of both Phil and myself. Me with Manchester, Phil with Sedgley Park. He's basically played for every club within 20 miles of here.
Yeah, who will pay?
Who will pay?
And he's worth the money.
And he's absolutely worth the money as a tight prop.
100%. And as a tight prop, he's set me up for a few tries as well.
So,
got a fair few assists.
Yeah, he's got great hands.
Lovely
Nick
hands.
Nick Flynn, and I said this to the man himself when I went to Exeter, Nick Flynn is a northwest version of the Alan Paver test. So my test, do you really know about rugby, is do you know who Alan Paver is?
Yeah.
And if anyone says, oh, Alan Paver, record Paris.
Said prop Cornish Pirates, played hundreds of games.
Yeah. If you know who Alan Paver is, we can proceed with this conversation. If not, same with Northwest, right? Northwest, if you don't know Nick Flynn, you don't know Northwest rugby.
If you don't know Flynny.
You just don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
So, why didn't Nick Flynn come into the conversation?
Blackburn. You were saying they were dominant in scrummaging. I was like, Nick Flynn's obviously got a new club.
Yeah, yeah. But I've heard the whole team is massive. And I don't know what happened there, because I don't remember them being particularly good when I went to play them. But anyway, there was that. So on the 18th of December, depends how things break, how things fall. But there's two games going on. And I'm hoping that my game against Widnes, which will probably be our biggest game of the season because Widnes are very good. So as things stand, it'll be 1-2. But you don't know until 18th of December how the league will look. But also, it'll be Phil's team, Sedgley, playing Huddersfield.
Sedgley Park are having a great start to the season.
Top of the table, Sedgley.
Currently top of the league, only a draw against Rotherham.
It's nice looking at the team sheet there as well, because there's a few players I played with.
In Sedge?
At Sedge.
Is there really?
Matthew Gallagher, I played with him at Manchester. He's a stalwart. He must be in his mid-30s now.
Don't know,
Second row, proper. Him and Flynny, quality players.
So I want to go... If the game gets rearranged, and it could well do, because things happen in winter and also got a load of free weekends, I want to go and watch Huddersfield versus Sedgley Park on the 18th of December.
Saturday before Christmas?
Yeah.
Well, then it's town. Difficulty. I'll meet you in town, but Sale are playing
Claremont.
It's quite a big game.
What time's kickoff?
3:15.
We've got enough juice with Sedgley and Huddersfield. Can we move that to 5:15?
5:15 or move it to a midday kickoff.
Yeah, and the lights.
Yeah.
Yeah, midday. We want to do that midday, don't we? So we can get over to the AJ Bell and then go into town.
So exactly. Sedgley Huddersfield at Sedge.
Yes.
Or we have to wait till the 12th of April.
18th of April.
18th of April it is. And it's Sedgley at Huddersfield, where we can get a train up, have a few beers.
Really ill trail.
Get another train to Leeds. Holiday Inn, rooftop bar, Holiday Inn, back on a train, back to Manchester for Sunday podcast.
Perfect.
What? What of it?
Well, on the 18th of December, if you're not going to the AJ Bell, I'll meet you in town.
There we go. Perfect. Perfect. So, yeah, there we go. Lovely end. Shall we do our predictions?
Yeah, yeah. What's going on next week, Phil?
Which are meaningless because we don't know what the teams are.
Yeah. Although I got 5.5 out of 6.
Mm. You don't get a half a draw.
5 out of 6.
Yeah, 5.
Paddy Jackson cost me
4. You got 4 out of 6. Same as me. I got Sale wrong. I got London Irish wrong. I should have called.
Get Sale wrong. I called Sale winning.
Yeah,
you. No, I did.
Yeah, but you got 5 out of 6.
Oh yeah.
Not 5
what,
and a half.
Why has he got 5?
Because I got all of the others right.
Sorry, I thought it was 4.5. Five.
Yeah.
Okay, games this weekend.
Oh, no. On my
5.5 because London Irish, who I backed, didn't lose.
Sorry, on my unofficial one, I think I did better because I picked Sale on the Sunday, but I picked Harlequins when I saw the teams.
Well, you got everything right then.
Exactly. So whatever I pick now, I'm going to do the opposite on my bets.
Okay, Friday night, we've got Northampton Saints hosting Worcester.
Saints.
Home win.
Yep.
We then have we have all 3 o'clock on Saturday. We have Exeter Chiefs versus London Irish.
Exeter.
Home win. Gloucester against Newcastle. That'd be interesting.
Where?
Gloucester.
Gloucester.
King's home. Yeah, give me Gloucester.
Gloucester are much better than I thought.
Hmm.
Falcons.
Hastings inspired. And Ben Morgan.
Yeah.
Looking good
again. They're just quite...
Oh, no. I'm going to go Gloucester as well.
They're just well
Gloucester,
coached.
Gloucester at home. Harlequins against Bath.
Wins.
Doesn't get much easier for Bath, does it?
No. Against their old head coach.
Yeah. Yeah. Dubai.
Do you know what? I think there's going to be a reaction from Bath. I just got a feeling, even though they let everyone down today, even though there must be tension in, you know, I can't help but think they're going to come out firing.
They've got to do something because they're proud rugby players. They're good rugby players.
Yeah,
they can't just roll over and take it again like that.
If they put out the team they put out today against Harlequins, I'd have to really think about it. Really think about it.
Quins are winning that.
Yeah, probably.
And the final game on Saturday will be interesting. It's Tigers against Sale.
Wow.
Oh, that's tasty.
I think that's the best.
Will AJ be back for that one?
Yeah, yeah.
He must be.
They need him.
I tell you what, though, that is two guys in their two head coaches that know exactly what they're doing, and they also know exactly what the other one's bringing.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be absolutely awesome. Now, I don't know if you're going to appreciate it. If you're not a rugby aficionado, it might not be for you. I think Leicester will win. God, I've picked against Sale every week. But I just think, like, the way they worked Nadolo into the game is really impressive.
If George Ford's that good, I think Leicester will win. He'll be the point of difference. He'll be the X factor.
Well, what happens with the South Africans? That everyone's South Africans? Because if they lose Van Staden and Visa, and Sale don't lose the Dupreez, you know, that's a big deal. That is a genuinely big deal.
So there's no game for South Africa next week, and it's not an international window yet until November.
Ah, yes, I'm a week early. So it's next. So Leicester were thinking of not playing their guys, so they were rested, but that means they only have them for 1 week, which would be next week. So they'll have them for next week as well.
They'll play them. They've got to get the pound of flesh.
Tigers.
You're Tigers at home.
Yeah, I know. It's mad. Just before we finish,
more game on the Sunday. We have Saracens versus Wasps, which will be Saracens at home.
Saracens at home.
It'll be Saracens.
Saracens, isn't it?
We have had an email from Dale, who's got, he says, listen to the literally in this bit of commentary from the weekend. From last weekend, I should say.
Ali, you can. He said credit to Nick Mullins.
Yeah, yeah. He got the names of the BT commentators wrong, but it was Ali.
That's
not as egregious as many of the literally.
It's not. Yeah, you could make that up.
Yeah, I think
you definitely could.
I'm done with that.
But you definitely could.
Welcome to Mark Howson, by the way. Welcome, Mark.
Who?
New patron.
Oh,
just signed up now.
Good lad.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Yeah, one thing I did as well after the the quotes from Jamie Redknapp saying Michael Owen was literally a greyhound. I did look up Jamie Redknapp quotes, and he said a lot of silly things.
Literally a greyhound is worrying.
Thank you very much for listening. Hit subscribe. Patreon.com/eggchasers. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. We love getting your emails.
Yeah, we do.
There's loads, and apologies if we didn't get to yours. There will be other opportunities. And he's at Jay Beardmore on Twitter. We're at Rugby Podcast. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Sweet. Nice. Oh, I've just seen this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.